I'm not going to cut this song off because I love it too much.
I don't know this.
Oh. You really don't?
No.
Let's listen.
We're off to a good start today.
Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill Wasserman left, Wendy Wasserman Snyder sitting across from me. We're both in trouble. What a weekend. You know, the Cubs are playing the White Sox for the next 4 days, yep. 4 games. And both teams have an interesting situation on their hands. For the White Sox, as you heard Steve talk about and a lot of people talking about, their star player, Chris Sale, is very dangerous with the scissors. Very dangerous man.
He wasn't running with them.
No, he was not running with the scissors. So we give him points for that. But you know there's an old kind of a edict in baseball which states you don't tear up your teammates' uniforms with scissors. But that's just bad. That's bad policy.
It's just not cool. I mean, what is he, 8? And if he is, he should be on this show. He'd fit right in.
It is the kind of thing an 8-year-old...
I don't want to wear this.
Right.
Hey, I didn't want to have bangs when I was about 8 to 10.
You didn't cut up anyone's uniform?
I cut my bangs off.
Oh, you did? Okay, that's
it didn't work because you're missing
too.
Hair there. I didn't
right.
think that through.
Right.
I just thought I'd cut them off and then do like a comb over.
How did that look?
It didn't look very
good. No, I bet
good.
Not. And it took how long to grow out?
Quite a while. And my mom, to punish me as they were growing out and they were very crooked, she made me wear them like that.
Oh, good punishment.
I never cut them again.
And that punishment was doled out from your mom and Kenny Williams, a very young Kenny Williams at the time.
But, I mean, isn't that such a babyish act to cut? I don't like the uniforms. I don't like management.
I'll just shred them.
Yeah, you.
I don't understand it. I don't get it.
And it's embarrassing that's why you're suspended, isn't it?
Yeah, because it lends itself. It's one of those things that now when he pitches in other cities and probably even here in town.
Cut him up.
You're going to hear a lot of that kind of stuff. You're going to see people making giant posters with scissors. And that's not good.
And do you say scissors or give me a scissor?
No, it's always scissors. And it's always a pair of scissors, even though you're really only getting one.
Well, there are two blades.
There's two blades, but
I guess you're right.
It's weird. People always go, I need a pair of scissors, because a pair would indicate two of something, and nobody needs two pairs of scissors.
Well, if Chris Sale did, right. He'd be like Edward Scissorhands.
He'd be done in half the time. That should be the theme music. Like, anytime he takes the mound now,
yes.
They should play Edward Scissorhands.
Oh, that's perfect.
All right.
Send that to White House management.
Yeah, see what they say.
White House, White Sox. I don't even know what's going on.
All right, so that's a problem on the south side. Now, the problem on the north side doesn't seem like it's a problem, but it is a problem. The Cubs have the best record in baseball, and things are going well for the Cubs. They had a little bit of a dip. They had a couple of weeks there that they forgot how to win games and get hits at the right moment. But they're doing well again. It happens. All right. Now, and I don't even know if you know this. If you're a Cubs fan, you're well aware of this. One of the fastest pitchers in baseball, possibly the fastest pitcher in baseball, is a man named Aroldis Chapman. He currently pitches for the Yankees. It looks like he's coming to the Cubs. He was with the Reds last year. He had a horrible, horrible incident where after a party, he was living in Florida at the time, in Davie, Florida. He just pulled out a gun and started shooting the gun with a lot of people around. It could have been ugly.
Was anyone hurt or injured?
Nobody
killed?
Was hurt or injured. But
I know, hurt or injured, it's the same thing. Sorry.
No,
it's
no
Monday.
One. No one was, but it's. It's
not cool.
It's not.
It's better to cut up shirts with scissors.
Yeah. Also, there are domestic abuse charges against Aroldis Chapman for an incident with his girlfriend. He says that these are just charges, that he's not been convicted, and that's true. It's 100% true.
Although, aren't there witnesses?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so he hasn't been convicted yet.
Yeah. Yeah. The question is this. I would love to see the Cubs get into the World Series and win the World Series. That would be fantastic. But then you say to yourself, is it worth it to compromise the integrity of the team? For the most part, the Cubs are made up of a lot of really good guys. They really are. I'm proud of the team that they field, and behind the scenes, they're really very good guys. So then you say to yourself, is it worth it to throw in a guy who seems to be in the wrong place at the wrong time quite a bit? Just to win a championship, and I'm not sure it's worth it. It's hard to root for a guy who would just pick up a gun and start shooting at a party. That's not the kind of guy that I'd be proud to root for. I want them to win, but then you're compromising. You're going, we're winning, but we're winning bringing in bad guys.
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can see where you're in a quandary.
It's tough because I would love, I mean, there have been other names thrown about as guys who could potentially help the Cubs, and they don't have this sort of black mark on their record. So I say to myself, I'd rather get a guy that's not quite as good but better for the team than a guy who really seems to, and again, he's not been convicted, I'll be honest with you, but it makes me nervous when you start bringing in guys that have stories like this behind them. You know?
And usually that's where you'd find it'd be more in football than in baseball.
Right.
It seems kind of weird
there's
usually baseball players kind of stay on the path of the straight and narrow
more
for the most
than
part.
Not. Yeah, every once in a while there'll be a story about somebody. And you're right. But I have to say, and this goes through all of athletics, for every bad apple in any sport, like Ray Rice is a good example. That's a bad guy. Ray Rice is a bad guy. So when he's available, how many teams just look the other way and go, yeah, he's had his problems off the field, but you know, we're hiring a guy to play football for us, and that gets sad to me.
See, but if you're a coach, that's what you do. You want the best player.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, in a way, what they do in their personal life doesn't make them a stand-up citizen or
right.
anything, but that you're not getting them for
no,
that.
That's
you're
true.
Getting them for their ability to play.
That's true. So, but you know what I mean? Like you're a very ardent fan of certain teams. Like, don't you say to yourself, but at some point I pay money to sit in a chair and watch your team perform, and you have a hard time getting excited about a guy who's a problem child. You know,
I think the majority of people just want to see a win.
I think you're right. But it does. I mean, it really is. You're giving in. You're kind of giving in. And I don't know what to make then of Chris Sale, because I think he's one of the premier pitchers in baseball. He really is.
But he's a baby.
But yeah, there's that. Yeah.
So do you have to get like a nanny or a babysitter to
yes.
watch him when he's off the field?
From now on, they have to get a nanny. That's true.
Instead of
the bullpen, he'll be in the timeout corner.
Ted, this is an embarrassment. You know, it'd be better to be suspended 5 games because you got into a fight. And people,
right.
I'm sorry, it just would be.
I know.
But
yeah,
this is
yeah.
so babyish.
You know, it is babyish. And he's definitely one of those people you don't want to give that second pair of scissors to, for sure. But
right.
Kind of thinking along the lines of, you know, he was the one that got really upset. I mean, one of the players that got really upset when Adam LaRoche was leaving the team. And you guys are just thinking, that sounds like something an 8-year-old do. Maybe Chris Sale thinks he's one of the kids that got left behind.
Maybe.
You know?
Whatever happened to No Child Left Behind? It's playing out right before our eyes. No, you're right. You're right. I mean, maybe Adam LaRoche's kid and Chris Sale, maybe they got along swimmingly.
Well, that bothered me, too, when Chris Sale went against management like that, just saying he was lied to. I thought that needed to be reprimanded right there.
They let it go.
And look what happened now.
Too. Yeah, that's what I thought too. And, you know, management, now they obviously know they got a problem, because there's the one guy over there with no uniform shirt on. It's like, now what do we do with this guy? You know?
Yep.
So,
although sometimes,
hey,
go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, you know, with the Cubs getting the pitcher from New York or trying to that, you know, just kind of an element of that. I'm not really trying to beat on the Cubs. I'm kind of with you, Bill. I'd really like to see them go through and win
yeah.
it. But there's something about with Joe Maddon as a manager, he's got to be sitting there thinking, you know, yeah, this guy's kind of in the gunplay, but I think I could use that. You know, he's kind of into the odd things to help inspire a team. So
I agree with you.
There may be an extra play going there. We don't know.
Maybe. And maybe here's the brightest lining you'll ever see on a spinning a story. Maybe this will be good for Aroldis Chapman. Maybe he comes to the Cubs and he sees a bunch of really good guys who, you know, play hard and they're good people.
Turns it all around.
And yeah, maybe this makes a difference in his life, maybe.
Absolutely. And then the only the bad side of that is if it really does happen and, you know, the Cubs win it, we got to keep the party to a minimum and keep the weapons away.
Right. That's true. That's very true. Thanks, Ted.
Thanks.
Have a great day.
Have a good one, guys.
Take care. One more quick thing on this, getting back to what Ted just said. Sometimes teams have a different set of rules for their superstars. There's a whole book called Jordan Rules, which is about just that. I think Bob Green wrote that book about how certain members of the team could or could not get away with certain things, but Michael Jordan being Michael Jordan could always get away with it because that's your star player and you don't want to upset him. So I imagine there's a slight element of that on the South side with the White Sox going, boy, Chris Sale really is one of the best pitchers we've ever had. Let's do our best to keep him happy.
Yeah, but that's not right either because he's really going against management at that point. Insubordination.
I know.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I know. So let's see what happens.
We need him.
I think so, too. There's been so much talk about all we could get for him if we traded him away. I don't want to see him go away, but I also don't want to see him doing things like cutting up his team's uniforms with scissors.
It's just so stupid. Why don't you bring him in here and pull down his pants and spank him?
Well, that would
bare bottom spanking.
That would be weird on so many levels, but if it makes the team better. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we have more to discuss with you. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I was talking to you off the air. Bill left, Wendy Snyder here, and I feel if Ozzie Guillen...
There's
Which
a name
would,
from the past.
I would love to see him come back more than anything. I loved when he was their guy.
He was fiery.
He was, and I don't think Chris Sale would have done anything like this.
Oh, that's a good question.
With
Woody
Ozzie
or
in charge.
That is a very good question.
He ran a tighter ship than Robin Ventura. A different ship, I guess I should say.
Well, Ozzie had some kind of a craziness running through him, too, didn't he?
You gonna mess with me? You gonna mess with my uniforms? I'll mess with you.
It was very Scarface-like.
He was, God, I miss him.
Yeah.
I really wish he'd come back. Come on, number 13, come back. Mark, what about your thoughts on this bad behavior for athletes?
The bad behavior, yeah, I think it's gotta end. But what I was going to say is, you know, Phil Jackson was able to handle Rodman with Jordan probably helping. So I'm sure, you know, Madden probably won't have too much of a problem with this guy from New York.
There is something to that. Dennis Rodman was just crackers.
Oh, yeah. He was our problem child, but we were able to control him, and he actually worked out really well. So I'm sure there's a couple guys on the control this guy. And
yeah.
It could probably end up being the good.
So you say everything could work out for the best. I hope you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say bring him in. If it doesn't, you can always get rid of him, can't you?
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. All right, let's give it a shot. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, I'd say so. Thanks, bud. See
this
you.
Guy throws.
Thanks, Aroldis bud.
You're welcome, bud. Other bud. Aroldis Chapman, by the way, throws 105 miles per hour. That's how hard and fast he throws. 105 miles per hour. That's very, very hard to hit.
Who's the fastest? Was the big unit up there in speed or not really?
You know, he consistently threw just over 100, but...
Randy
I don't know
Johnson.
That he was hitting 105. And there's some kid somewhere in the minor leagues that's hitting like 106 or 107, and he's a kid. He's like 19 or 20 years old. That's amazing.
Well, isn't that when they sign these players now?
Yeah.
That's changed, hasn't it?
The guy that the Cubs will trade to the Yankees is only 18. He's younger than my kids. That's amazing. He's a top prospect at the age of 18. And in hockey, that's a little more common
right.
for a guy to come up when you're 18 or 19. But
baseball, that's not common, although
no.
it is now, isn't it? Starting to be?
I think the youngest guy in baseball history, the Indians had a guy named Joe Nuxall, who later became a broadcaster. And I think his first game pitched with the Indians, he was either 15 or 16.
What?
And he was playing in the major leagues. Yeah. Yeah.
God,
it's a lot
really
of responsibility.
Am behind in my accolades in life. I really am.
You never pitched a major league game at 15 or 16. I didn't.
I didn't do anything.
No.
At 15 or 16.
Everyone matures at a different rate.
I'm still waiting.
It's going to happen.
Good God, y'all.
It's absolutely going to happen. Seriously, though, if somebody had the wherewithal to put out White Sox uniforms that were shredded just properly, like a fringe type of a look, as you mentioned earlier.
Very popular.
Don't you think that would sell right now?
Absolutely.
I think people would buy into that right now. It's air conditioned.
Good point.
It's so hot out. I think that's your best bet is to get some little vent holes all in there.
Vent holes. Speaking of athletes, Peanut Tillman's going to be with us later on today. He's officially retired a Bear.
Yeah.
How does that work, though? Doesn't he have to, like, go to one practice or something?
No.
It's just
the semantics of signing a contract. And I think they even call it
ceremonial or
something? Yeah, it's definitely ceremonial, but I think they even acknowledge the fact that it's just a one-day contract. The NFL has like a whole separate contract system just so people can do this, you know. And it's good for him. It's good for the team.
It's good for us.
He played every year but one here in Chicago. His whole career but one year was here in town, and he should retire as a Bear. It really, in the long run, doesn't mean anything. It's just ceremonious, but it's nice.
I wish he was still playing as a Bear.
Wouldn't that
be
nice?
We could use him.
I know. Hate to see him go. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have a lot on today's show, so stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Wendy, something that's a lot of fun to do is an impression of the president. Maybe you do Kennedy or Nixon, Lyndon Johnson, one of the Bushes. It's just fun to do an impression of the president.
I should work on my Hillary Clinton.
More scolding.
I got to be more scolding.
Way more scolding.
I'll work on that.
William Wan is our guest. He's a writer over at Washington Post, and he wrote a great piece a short time ago called The Surprisingly Dark Twisted History of Presidential Impersonators in America. And boy, is that true. William, thank you for being here.
Great to be here.
If you wouldn't mind, start out with a man named Vaughn Meader. Now, if you're in your 50s or older, you will certainly know who Vaughn Meader is. If you're in your 40s or younger, you may have never heard of him, but boy, did he make an impact.
Yeah, you know, his album was one of the first breakout presidential impersonations. This is of JFK, of course. And it was, you know, it won the Grammy, Grammy for Album of the Year, just beating out everything, music, Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Yep.
It was heard by everyone. You know, Martin Luther King Jr. to Kennedy, JFK himself heard this. Huge impression. And it was kind of just the first marker of when presidential impersonations became like a public phenomenon.
That album was called The First Family, and it changed everything, because all of a sudden it was very cool to make fun of the president. And he himself, Kennedy, and the First Family, they loved it, didn't they?
Yeah, you know, he was very good-natured. It even came up in press conferences, what he thought of Von Meter's, you know, impression of him. You know, prior to that, it's actually funny, you know, we think of presidential impersonations as like just this thing that exists in our country. But before that, it basically did not exist. People tried it and failed. This guy, Will Rogers, was a very famous comedian in his time, did it once and had to publicly apologize, wrote this long, abject letter, you know, to Calvin Coolidge. And then when he tried it again with FDR, he had to write another letter saying, "I'm so sorry, I miscalculated, in bad taste," you know, that kind of thing.
Well, have to admit, I have never heard of Vaughn Meader.
Oh, no.
He was a stand-up comic?
Yes and no. It was an impression.
Yeah.
He surrounded himself with other actors, and they all did little vignettes about what the Kennedy family would be experiencing.
And he was dead on, like, with the impression?
He was really dead on, yeah. Before that, he was, like, really little-known, you know, stand-up comedian, and this really put him on the map. He sold out, like, sold 7.5 million copies of his album at the time.
And what year was this? Because that's astounding. 7.5 million in what year?
1961, was it?
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. And he went, I mean, the thing about him that's amazing is he just went from, like, the hottest star. He had just put together this reprise, like an encore album on Kennedy, using his impression again. And then, like, you know, the tragedy strikes and JFK's assassinated, and, like, man, the whole idea, not just his career, but the whole idea of, like, impersonating the president, it just like dies there with JFK. Like, no one wants to laugh at or about the president again.
William, do you know, is the story about Lenny Bruce true? There's a legend that said that a couple days after the assassination, Lenny Bruce goes on stage and just looks at the audience and says, "Well, Vaughn Meader is screwed." Is that true?
I came across that. I have not, you know, independently verified that, but it certainly was true. I mean, his career never recovered. He ended up an alcoholic, addicted to drugs. You know, no one booked. He went from, like, being booked on every program, you know, Ed Sullivan, all of that, to, like, no one would touch him.
And that's heartbreaking, really.
It is. I mean, he died not so long ago. He died in 2004, And, you know, there were obits in the New York Times and Washington Post just because of how influential he was during JFK's time. But, like, he, you know, he talked about when shortly before he died, he had told one writer, you know, that day, you know, when Kennedy was assassinated in 1963, that was the same day I died in some way, you know?
Terrible.
Why didn't he go on and do other impressions? I mean, couldn't he have moved forward?
He just looked and sounded so much like Kennedy that it would have been, some people are able to morph a little easier than others, but he just was the embodiment of Kennedy. You looked at him, you heard him, he just sounded like Kennedy. It was crazy.
It's tough, too. I've been talking to Obama impersonators. You know, these are the last days of being an Obama impersonator,
yeah.
Kind of. And, you know, they're kind of facing the same thing. I mean, they've just got a few more months. You know, what can you do with your life, you know, when you've been on the spotlight as an Obama impersonator and then, you know, no longer? It's kind of a tough thing.
Yeah. Now, let me pull out another obscure name. This was a guy who kind of mastered Richard Nixon. He would show up on Rowan and Martin's Laughing doing Nixon or almost any show back in the 70s. And that's a guy named David Fry.
Yeah. His, oh, man, if you've ever seen his, you know, if you go on YouTube, you can see these guys, and his Nixon is just eviscerates him. He did a comedy album as well, and his version of Nixon is paranoid, is, you know, just brutal. You know, he as Nixon, talks about how, like, you know, the only way I'm going to leave the White House is if you drag me out kicking and screaming. Because I love America, and then he goes into his Nixon voice, which I can't do, but he says, and, you know, you always hurt the one you really love, and it's just really brutal kind of. And before that, you know, people hadn't gone at, you know, the Von Meter thing of JFK, it was very soft. It was like very soft kind of feel-good humor. David Fry's Nixon was just a takedown, like pure and simple.
And wouldn't you agree, William, that almost everybody at the time that was doing an impression of Richard Nixon was doing an impression of David Fry doing an impression of Nixon.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
He always had the arms up and the peace signs out, and he would just shake his head back and forth and back and forth. It was nervous to watch, but boy, he nailed it.
Yeah, and it's funny, you think about, I mean, it's such a generational thing, like Von Meter, David Fry. Like nowadays, it's not, you know, it's funny to think about how dated it becomes, and maybe in a few years, like, people won't, you know, it'll be like a distant memory of, like, Chevy Chase and his Gerald Ford, you know, Will Ferrell and his W.
Yeah. You know, what's funny, as a kid, there was a book that was David Fry, and he had gone to China. And they just showed him, and it was the same time Richard Nixon went to China, so they just show him playing ping pong with a guy who looks like Mao Zedong, and he's at the Great Wall of China. And there's no, it's a book, so you're not even getting the verbal impression, but still that book sold real well.
Can I play some Von Meter? Just
oh, yeah.
Because
you got to hear it.
Honestly, I'm not familiar with this person.
You'll love it.
Well, I think that if we are all finished with our meal, we could begin with the business at hand.
Pulls up a makeshift podium. This is 1962, the first family press conference. I just want to hear a little more of it.
Now, just one statement to clear up something that came before concerning the rate of economic growth. Therefore, I think that it is not with too much concern that I say a raise from 25 to 35 is not completely out of accord when compared to the current financial deficit on hand. Now, I trust that answers once and for all that question about your allowance, Caroline.
He sounds just like
doesn't
him.
He? And he had the look. I mean, everything was in place.
Von Meter.
The humor is a little, you can tell, I mean, the humor is a little dated. It's really funny how things have sped up and gotten more vicious as you go along. You know?
Well, you know what? Let's talk about that next, because there's a reason for that, and we'll get into that in just a little bit. Stick around. It's me, Bill Leff. It's her, Wendy Snyder, and William Wan from the Washington Post, who's written this great article, The Surprisingly Dark Twisted History of Presidential Impersonators in America. If you want to call in or text in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder with you, along with William Wan. William is a roving correspondent who just wrote a great piece for The Washington Post. You can read it at WashingtonPost.com. It's called The Surprisingly Dark Twisted History of Presidential Impersonators in America. We've covered Vaughn Meader a little bit. That's the man who did President Kennedy back in the 60s. We've talked about David Frye, who did an amazing impression of Richard Nixon back in the 70s. But let's talk about what a game changer Saturday Night Live was, William.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of ground zero for where it all takes off. The kind of guy who really put it on the map was Chevy Chase and his Gerald Ford. And what's funny about Chevy Chase's Ford is that it's really not an impression. It's just Chevy Chase running into things, tripping, falling down. He doesn't even try that hard, you know?
Didn't really look like him.
Or sound like him.
I know, nothing at all. But we all took it and laughed at it. It was really funny.
From Chevy Chase, like, it's an entire cottage industry. And what's funny about, like, these impersonators, I've been hanging around with a lot. I have been doing kind of a series of stories about these presidential impersonators. And, like, SNL has become, like, the Carnegie Hall for a presidential impersonator. Everyone wants to get on there to do their, to be the person, you know, in the moment. And, it's really interesting how, like, there's a real professionalism that comes with it. Like, one guy was telling me that the one time he got on NBC, it wasn't SNL, it was Jimmy Fallon, to be Obama on Jimmy Fallon. Mm-hmm. Like, there's become this whole professionalization of it, from Chevy Chase just stumbling around in his normal hair and everything, to, like, now they're cutting your actual hair, dyeing it gray, and sprinkling it back in to give you more of a natural Obama hair and, like, prosthetic ears and just the whole nine yards.
All right, so as bad as Chevy Chase's Gerald Ford impression was, and it was just based on clumsiness, and Gerald Ford was mildly clumsy, but he didn't have a daily occurrence where he'd fall downstairs. But then, right after Chevy Chase does Gerald Ford, all of a sudden Dan Aykroyd nails Jimmy Carter. He gets the voice, he gets the look, he's perfect at it.
Except he never took his mustache off.
No, he kept the mustache.
That drove me nuts.
Right.
Yeah, his Aykroyd is pretty. I mean, it's so funny how, like, now, you know, I'm a younger guy, you know, I'm in my mid 30s, and, like, I grew up, like, thinking this was just a thing, you know, presidential impersonators, SNL. But it's funny when you start going back to, like, the origins, where you see kind of, it's much more raw and, it's really interesting. Like, it's not as polished as, you know, Tina Fey and her Sarah Palin. And, yeah, it's really interesting.
I remember there was an episode of Saturday Night Live years and years ago. Now, as it turns out, you were probably one or maybe two. But Dan Aykroyd did, it was like what went on in the White House during Richard Nixon's years. It was he and Henry Kissinger together. And his impression of Richard Nixon was far more accurate than David Frye's was.
Oh, yeah. do you guys have a favorite of all the SNL guys? Do you guys have a favorite of impersonators?
I think Daryl Hammond does a great Bill Clinton, and I love that. We just had Jay Farrow in the studio, and he did Barack Obama, which I think is dead on.
Yeah.
And I love, is it Kate McKinnon with her Hillary?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have a favorite. Do you, Bill?
I would go Dana Carvey's original George Bush, you know?
I just think,
and again, they all kind of have the same thing.
Prudent?
Yes.
Yeah. That was pretty good.
They all kind of have that same thing where and this is, I guess, the key to a good impression. You're taking the essence of what that person is and blowing it up, doing it bigger than ever. And I thought Dana Carvey's version of Bush was really, really funny.
And then Will Ferrell did it too, and not as well, but almost funnier.
With George W. Bush.
Oh, yeah. I guess the different ones. Yeah.
I gotta say, I think that's my favorite, Ferrell and this W. Because just the other day, I mean, under much darker circumstances, I was covering that Dallas memorial where W. Bush kind of just came out of, you know, his reclusive, you know, last few years. And
danced
really
at the
funny end.
Yeah. He did that weird dance at the end. I don't know why.
He did. And when he started talking, I just couldn't. He seemed like an impersonation of himself. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I forgot what, you know, Bush was like until you see it. And I couldn't help seeing, like, Will Ferrell saying all those words. And
yeah.
It was really hard to take.
You know, sometimes also there will be one kind of characteristic move. I mean, the whole thing has to be there. But I always thought, like, with Will Ferrell's version of George W. Bush, after he would say something questionable, he would give a squint. There was a squint, even I don't know what that means. And every time he'd do it, I go, yeah, that's perfect.
It's like a punctuation mark, right?
Yeah, very much so. Who do you think, of all the ones, William, that have done impressions of the presidents, who stands out the most to you?
You know, Farrell's really good. The Clinton, you know, the various people. So I've been spending time with people off SNL, too. And there's this guy who does a Clinton who's really, really interesting. This guy in Chicago, he's not a great Bill Clinton, mm-hmm. but he's a really impassioned one because he's like this conservative Goldwater Republican who just happened to look like Clinton and like kind of said, well, I'll try my hand at this impersonation thing. And so I spent some time with him and he was telling me how like he had to learn. I mean, his version of impersonation is different than these SNL guys. He felt like he had to understand the character of Clinton, come to terms with him, and even like come to like him and admire him in some way before his impersonation really, before he could really nail it.
Wow, that's a different approach. You don't know the name. You don't know his name, though?
Oh, yeah. What is his name? Dale, I've been spending too much time with that. People.
No, that's okay.
I'm just dying to know because you say he's from Chicago.
I wonder if it's somebody we know. It might be somebody we know. What about the guys? There's a handful of guys that are just, you know, dyed-in-the-wool impressionists. Rich Little, I guess, would be the first guy who comes to mind, and even the late Fred Travellina. Rich Little, at some point, has done impressions of every president.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Actually,
there are
he does...
who, like, their careers are, right?
Yeah. Rich Little did a piece, I don't know if he still does it, where he shows, you know, the presidents of the last 40 years and just morphs from one into the other, into the other, into the other. And it's, I'm not the biggest Rich Little fan in the world, but that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. You know, the most recent incarnation of that I thought was hilarious and so great. I don't know if you guys saw this. I think it's like a middle schooler, this kid who does an impersonation of, he goes from Bernie Sanders to Donald Trump to Hillary Clinton. Got to check it out.
He was at his commencement speech, and it was pretty fantastic watching that kid. I want to say he's from Palatine or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny to think, you know, we think, oh, kids don't pay attention to some of this stuff, and that kid nailed it.
Yeah.
So,
guy in Chicago, his name is Dale Leigh, L-E-I-G-H, and he's so interesting because he's like a longtime Clinton, but like he said, the thing that unlocked it for him is when he started watching old kind of videos of Clinton. And then when he saw him in person, like he didn't get to it until he saw him in person, just the charisma that comes off him. He said, you know, I'm a Christian. I can't condone what he did. I can't really. But like when I saw kind of the golden glow that he gets when he's around people, that's something I could admire and identify with.
Wow.
Yeah.
William, one other thing. You know, Johnny Carson, as talented a man as he was not an impressionist, and yet from time to time, Johnny Carson would do a Ronald Reagan impression, and he was really very good at it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think everybody has, you know, all those comedians. Like, you look at Jimmy Fallon, I don't think his, like, Donald Trump is, you know, that good, but, like, it's if you can get something serviceable enough, you know, like it's really the material that like sells it.
Yep. So true.
And to give that little eighth grader credit, Jack Aiello from Arlington Heights.
That's the kid.
You can Google him and it's just
fantastic. The
funniest thing ever.
William did a great job with this. This was such an interesting story and it was fun to talk to you. Again, William Wan's work is The Surprisingly Dark Twisted History of Presidential Impersonators in America. You can find it at WashingtonPost.com. What are you working on now?
You know, I go from like humor to it's been a lot of mass shootings. You know, I did Dallas and then Baton Rouge and I'm doing something now on I'm switching back to Obama. I kind of switch between those two.
Yeah.
Now I'm doing something on Obama and he has this verbal tic where he likes to say who we are. That's not who we are. This is who we are
right.
in his speeches.
Right.
And so I'm just doing kind of exploration of who exactly does Obama think we are
Interesting.
As a country.
Good. Well, the best of luck to you on that and everything else. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much.
That's
Thank
William
you.
Wan.
With you guys.
We loved it. William Wan of the Washington Post. We'll take a quick break and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
No more words. Actually, I have an article. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. 11 words that started out as spelling mistakes. Can we talk about
these?
Oh,
yeah. I didn't know that could happen.
I didn't either, although I've made up words and you have too on occasion, and then
it's better.
We use them.
The language should be more pliable. If there's not a word for something and you think of one, throw it in. I'm fine with that.
We'll conversate.
Yeah, let's do that.
I love making up words.
Sure.
But these are actual words that came across as a spelling mistake. Expediate.
Meaning to make something happen quickly?
Yes, to hasten or to complete something promptly. The verb expediate is thought to have been invented by accident in the early 1600s when the adjective form of expedite, meaning ready for action or alert, was misspelled in an essay by the English politician Sir Edwin Sandys.
That guy.
So he meant to put expedite, but he put expediate, and it became a word.
Maybe it's just because you and me are used to hearing it, but it's that word fits the bill. I mean, but again, we've grown up with that being a word, but I could see where there'd be some confusion.
Yes, and they're very similar.
Yeah.
Culprit.
Somebody guilty of something? Somebody who
did
something?
Yeah, several different accounts of the origin of culprit, but all of them seem to agree that the word was born out of a mistake. Back when French was still the language of the law in England in the Middle Ages, the phrase culpable, plaidavere notre bill.
You're speaking French again.
Literally, guilty, ready to prove our case. That's what it was all apparently right. The stock reply given by the clerk of the crown whenever a defendant gave a plea of not guilty.
Someone culpable,
yes,
would be culpable. Culpable or
culpable?
Culpable would be a culprit.
Nancy, yeah. Culpable.
Right. Miss Jane Hathaway.
In the court records, this fairly long-winded phrase was often abbreviated to just C-U-L period P-R-I-T.
Oh.
So culpable, and then plaidavere notre bill, so culpable. And as the Oxford English Dictionary explains, by a fortuitous or ignorant running together of the two, the word culprit was born.
Okay, but couldn't you make that same argument for many, many, many words?
Like,
wouldn't you say, none of them come to mind? How's that for an example?
That's a great argument.
I don't know any of them, but I'm sure they're out there. But I bet... a lot of our words that are just common words started just because of that, because somebody went, well, that needs to be shortened or fixed or
right.
Changed just a little bit.
But it came from French and turned into an English
right.
Word.
Right.
And here's a little question, a little sidebar, if you will.
I know what you're going to ask. No, you don't have to be French to be a culprit. Culprits can be from all walks of life, all lands. You don't have to be French.
All right, we can move on.
There was a time where that was the case, but not anymore.
Why is it that when we were in school and you would write something and you'd put example, like EX?
Right.
And then all of a sudden it turned into EG.
Well, that's the work of one of our finest actors, EG Marshall, Wendy, who invented that many years ago.
I know IE is a Latin word that says...
The I and the E are Latin.
I get that, but it was like you'd read in a textbook
right.
And they'd put EX period or colon.
Meaning example makes sense.
And then all of a sudden it turned to EG.
Yeah, I don't know why that is,
but you
you're
saw
right.
It?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I've also
how
seen
did
it.
That happen? You can't just change something.
I always, in my head, and I guess now there's a computer I could look it up if I wanted to, but... I always thought that must also be Latin, like IE. There must be some, that
well,
must be
keep
some.
Keep it IE.
Right. Sometimes I'll put IEIEO if I'm writing to farmers. Bum, ba dum, bum, 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 bum. I'll put that in there in Latin.
All right. I have the difference between IE, EG, and EX.
What are the, it all means an example. Doesn't
well,
it?
IE, short for the Latin id est, the literal meaning that is, but
right.
In English it's easier to think of it as in other words.
Oh, yeah, right.
So
IOW, that's what I put, IOW.
You're going to make this very confusing, aren't you? EG is also short for the Latin exempli gratia.
I don't speak
Latin.
It's
in English,
Latin.
That's for example.
Right.
And EX is short for example. It's just the English version of EG, and it's used the same way. But why did they change it?
So EG Marshall,
oh,
his real name is, for example, Marshall?
I'm done. Can I go home early? I'd like to go home early today.
We've now said EG Marshall more than any other radio show on the planet today.
Are you proud of
probably,
that?
I'm very proud of that.
Good. Jim, are you proud of that?
I'm very proud of that.
Good.
Good. What are words for? I mean, they're all confusing. What did you want to jump in with?
I just
posh.
In olden days, the liners in Liverpool, with the wealthier clients, would want port over starboard home, so their cabins would always face the south and be warmer and have nicer weather. Okay.
Yeah.
So instead of writing port over starboard home, they just wrote POSH, meaning get the better accommodations.
And that's true? That's not just a legend? That's 100% true?
Okay. Would I lie?
No.
Yes.
So port over starboard home's spice was my favorite one.
Without this, we would have not had one of our greatest of all the Spice Girls, I think. That's fantastic.
Correct.
Wow. And why do you know this?
It's just one of the useless pieces of information I have stored in my brain.
Good. I like hearing
it comes
that.
You're close. You didn't lie, but it's port out starboard home.
I always heard port over. Mm. Overseas and then starboard home.
Port
out. Okay. Yeah, okay, I could buy out.
Yes,
either one of them kind of illustrate the point.
Posh. Yeah.
Posh.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much. Words are fun, aren't they?
Thank you for listening. Bye.
Where does sporty and scary come from, Wendy? Do we know that?
I need to England.
Know. I guess from England. Yeah, that would be true, wouldn't it?
I have more.
I want to hear more.
Nickname? Nicknames were originally called... Eek names.
Eek names. E-K-E. I still say that. What's your eek name, I'll say to somebody?
Flatfoot Fluji.
That's right. Why would it be an eek name?
I'm going to tell you. Funny you should ask that. E-K-E. So I don't know if that's how you... With the verb eek used here in the sense of...
There's a mouse coming.
No, E-K-E.
Oh.
To make longer or to provide an addition.
Yeah.
Sometime in the 13th century, however, an eek name was mistakenly interpreted as a neek name. And the N permanently jumped across from the indefinite article an to the verb eek. So now you have neek name.
That's even weirder.
The same error known linguistically as rebracketing or this is just getting worse, is responsible. That doesn't even make sense. I'm not reading it to
you. All right, that's fine. You don't have to.
I can, but I'm
telling you. No, if it doesn't make sense, don't.
So then neek name became nickname.
Nickname.
Syllabus?
That's a venereal disease.
Syphilis.
Yes, it is. Oh, that's syphilis, right. What's your eek name? That's what you should ask somebody. That's like a screening process to make sure they don't have syllabus.
Trippy.
Right. If the person you meet, if that's their eek name, run. Don't talk to them. Don't fraternize with them. Yes, we need to take a break. And then more of this sort of behavior. 312-981-7200 if you'd like to jump in. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, we're talking about the origins of words. It turns out many of the words that we use on a daily basis were accidents at first. Hard to believe.
Yes, and somebody said weren't all words invented? Yes, they were.
Yeah, it was somebody's job a long, long time ago to just sit in a chair and look at stuff and go, I'll call that a pineapple. And you go, well, it's not really an apple and there's no pine on it. Why are you calling it a pineapple? But that was a job back then.
That is a great point.
Yeah.
Syllabus, if all had gone to plan in the history of the word syllabus, those two L's should really be T's. Syllabus was coined as a Latin misreading of an ancient Greek word, sidibos.
Sidibos.
Meaning a table of contents.
Oh.
And then they read it wrong. Someone wanted to know when the numerical sign, you know, the tic-tac-toe that's
yes.
on the side of Archie's head in the Archie comic books.
It's on your phone. It's on your computer. It's the number sign. Yeah.
But it was also called the pound sign.
Oh, yeah, true.
Which is, you know, God, remember, you will remember this, rotary phones that went to the touch buttons, the touch tone.
Yes.
And you saw the little asterisk and the little number sign there, and you thought to yourself, what are we going to use those for?
Right. Do you remember what you were told? I know what I was told.
No.
I was told that at some point our phones would have a feature where you could see the other person and that those buttons were being reserved for that.
Where were you going to see them? Through the handset?
Yeah, that was the part that was a little iffy. But I was told, whenever I would ask anybody that, and that was like a daily thing for me because it would bother me that there were those extra buttons. They would always say, well, soon in the future, you'll be able to see the other person, so you'll have to press that button to activate that feature. So I bought into that.
Hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
I think I was actually told that it would be used to connect to a different number, like you'd have to use it for part of a number someday because the numbers were running out. That's what I think someone told me.
So somebody's number eventually would have like
708
number sign 382 ampersand 6538.
There is no ampersand.
What was it? It was a number sign and what was the other one?
The asterisk.
The asterisk, right. You had the asterisk.
But here's the thing. It was also called the pound sign. And how did that number sign turn into pound?
Because
they go for, if you'd like to hear your or punch in your party's extension followed by the pound sign.
Right.
You'd be like, what's a pound sign? That's
right.
A number sign. And now it's a hashtag.
Yeah, the same symbol is now number sign, pound sign, and hashtag. That one's way overworked.
Do you know what the technical term? It has a fourth name.
No.
And I would like this to be your eek name from
I need a new eek name.
Octothorpe.
That's a lot. Why is it that?
Because there's
Octo
eight
means
points.
Eight, but there's nine in the... You get nine segments, though.
No, but if you do the number sign, the top of each line, that would be eight of them.
One, two, three, four. No, I get nine squares.
Not squares, the end of the line.
Points. Oh, yeah, there's eight, though. There's eight of those.
It's an octothorpe.
But the segments are more impressive than the ends.
I would go with a nonothorpe.
I would go with...
You see why we're not inventing words?
Yeah, that's not for us.
Octo in reference to the 8 points in the figure, and Thorpe from the surname
Jim Thorpe.
Thorpe.
For Jim Thorpe, one of our greatest athletes.
Hash probably arose as an alteration of hatch, originally in the phrase hatch mark. By 1961, hash was being used in computing context to refer to Octothorpe's symbol. Especially in computing and telecommunication contexts. So it was hatch, and then it turned into hashtag in 2007.
Octothorpe sounds like a bad guy from Spider-Man, doesn't it?
Yes.
Not the Octothorpe. He's my worst enemy.
All right, and I have one more for you.
All right.
Actually, two, because these are stupid to me.
All right, do the stupid ones.
That's sneeze.
Sneeze was an accident?
Yes.
What was it supposed to be?
Sneeze was spelled with an F, not an S.
Fneeze? Really?
Yes.
That's awful.
It's tough to say.
Mom, Kevin keeps fneezing. Give him a Kleenex.
Stop it.
It would be hard to say.
No,
it doesn't
it
make
is.
Sense to start it with an F.
So in Middle English, the F was there instead of the S, which gives weight to the theory that it was probably originally coined onomatopoeically.
Yeah. That's
still, though,
a word that looks like it sounds.
Right. Like, so when you sneeze, it would be like, sneeze.
That's stupid.
It sounds just like it. At least one explanation of why the letter changed suggests that the F inadvertently became an S sometime in the 15th century due to continual misreadings of the long lowercase F as an S.
I could see that.
I'm going to go back to sneeze.
Would you do me a favor? Do it just for a week. Just anytime somebody sneezes, just go, I couldn't help but hear you sneeze. I was across the room and I heard you sneeze. Are you all right? Everything all right?
And finally, I did not know that this word was an accident. These are words that started out as spelling mistakes.
I bet it hurts these words' feelings to hear that they're accidents. Don't you think?
No.
You don't think so?
This is from mentalfloss.com, which really does go through my brain.
Yes.
I like that website.
Yes.
The word pee. P-E-A, not
the vegetable,
little green
the ones
thing.
In the pods.
Yes. Another word that developed from a plural that actually wasn't is pee. One pee was known as a P-E-A-S-E, a peas.
What, just one of them still had the plural
May
sound.
I have a peas, please? That's in Middle English. But because of the final S sound, peas was quickly misinterpreted as a plural, giving rise to a misguided singular form of pee in the 17th century.
But realistically, that to have one, you wouldn't end it with an S because it sounds like you're having more than one. And who could eat more than one? It's so filling.
P-E-A-S-E. So it was pronounced, may I have a peas?
Yeah, I don't like it.
And just so you know, in Middle English, the plural of peas.
Yeah.
Peasen.
Oh, that sounds like poison. That's bad for business. They had to change that immediately.
And this goes, this pea and peas goes into the whole scissors thing.
Oh, yeah.
With Chris Sale.
Right.
I want to know, and you've met people that go, would you hand me a scissor?
Yeah, they're wrong, because scissors come, it's you say a pair of scissors, which is ridiculous, because it's one, you're only getting one thing when you ask for a pair of scissors. I can't eat peas, you know, because they make me sneeze, but other people in my family love them.
Jeff, how are you? Jeff.
Good.
Did you make up a word?
Well, yeah, you guys were talking about if you have a word, work it in. Well, I've got one for you.
What is it?
Bruceolate.
What does bruceolate mean?
Well, do you know what cogitate means?
A little bit, yeah.
Cogitate means to think very deeply.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, when you bruceolate, you cogitate, but it hurts.
So much thinking, it actually hurts. Well, that's bad.
You know, like in chemistry, I had to bruceolate quite a bit.
I like that.
I hope that word takes off. You'll be a billionaire.
Did you Bunsen burnerate too? Jeff, I have a good one. I know we're being silly, but you wake up every morning and the crazy news that's going on, sometimes
right.
You need a little escape from it. And Eric Zorn's going to be in. We're going to talk about the whole Democratic National Convention, which kicks off, I believe, today at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, it does.
Rose
right.
out there.
Mm-hmm.
And just this tragedy, Germany has had four terrible things happen in 1 week.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes you just need an escape and take a sneeze.
That's all you can do sometimes. We'll take a quick break. News is next. Kim with the news and then Eric Zorn. Stay where you are. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks very much. Eric Zorn is here, feisty columnist for your Chicago Tribune. But Kevin has some breaking news. Kevin, can you share this with us?
It's SB Nation reporting that the Aroldis Chapman trade has happened.
Aroldis Chapman, formerly of the New York Yankees. We discussed him earlier. He's a guy who's had some off-the-field issues, both with a gun and with domestic abuse charges. And we were saying earlier, is it worth it to compromise the integrity of the team?
Evidently it is.
I guess it is.
Boys will be boys, right?
Boys will be boys.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder who they traded him for. I know that they were talking about some...
It's a young kid, an 18-year-old shortstop.
Just one? I thought they were talking about... Maybe two. Well, I don't know. Anyway, whatever. I mean, it seems like they're sacrificing their future and selling their souls a little bit to get this guy. What was that movie Damn Yankees where they the senators sold their soul to the devil to
right.
get to it? I mean, there's some.
Right.
I mean, you have these charges. He pleaded guilty to the gun charges, right? But
he says he never laid hand on his girlfriend.
Yeah,
he almost went to the Damn Yankees too. They were in the mix as well.
Well, he was with the.
I'm sorry.
That's who he was with. Yeah.
But
it's hard to root for a guy. I was saying it's hard to sit at Wrigley and root for a guy. You want the team to win, but then a guy comes in and you go, wow, this guy's a little bit of a
loose cannon. Yeah, I raised this issue earlier this morning on Twitter. I just was, you know, kind of concerned about this possible trade. And someone was saying, well, what do you expect these pro athletes to be, choir boys? Like,
yeah.
A lot of them have issues, and that is true. A dismaying number of professional athletes have issues like this, but
usually not baseball. Though
baseball is not so much, and these charges are particularly disturbing. You know, like he was choking or allegedly choking her, and so on.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's done, right? And
so you're not going to watch the Cubs?
No, I'm still going to watch.
He's
going to
turn it off when they bring him in.
I'm still going to want them to win, but it would be hard to physically cheer for a guy, even though I want the team to win, and I don't know. These are still just charges, but I'd prefer that they had not gotten him. I know that sounds strange because I want to see them go all the way.
You wouldn't be a very good businessman, I got to tell you.
I'd be a terrible businessman.
Which I would be, too. We think with our heart too much. It's a business.
You know, I had a little bit of a gambling thing for a while. And there's an analogy to gambling where they say you always have to bet with your head, not with your heart. And that cost me money over the years, was betting with one and
you
not the other.
You weren't a good gambler?
Rams are tough animals.
Wait, you weren't a good gambler?
No, you know what? Actually,
I was,
but there were a couple teams that I would look at. I always, because I love the Dolphins, I had a hard time betting against the Dolphins. There were times where I'd go, what's wrong with you?
They clobbered the Bears back in 85.
I know.
They must be good.
I know. So Aroldis Chapman is a Cub, for better or worse. We don't know yet. We'll see how that plays out. But you guys get what I mean, right? It's tough to root for a guy, and these are just charges, I guess. But I would have preferred them not gotten him.
Now, before we went on the air, you and I were trying to remember the name. The Bears have brought in some players who have some iffy pasts.
Right.
And certainly they've had people who've had problems while they were here, too.
Yes.
And, you know, what do you do? I guess you look the other way a little bit. We wag our fingers here and we move on, right?
One of our listeners called in before and said, what about the Bulls when they took on Dennis Rodman? Dennis Rodman was one of basketball's most problematic children.
He
did well here.
I don't think, did Dennis Rodman have, were there, I mean, he was a very odd person, but I don't remember any
no domestic abuse, right?
No, you know. The Bulls, there probably have been some other people in the Bulls over the years.
Without a doubt.
This is kind of troubling, but go Cubs, right?
Let's see what happens. All right, the Republican convention came and went with really no major stories, nothing out of the ordinary
what?
There.
It was
my covers really? Are still up over my head.
There's really nothing of note that happened there in Cleveland that I can think of. Anyway,
it would be better to say what didn't happen.
I know.
And now, according to a CNN poll, Trump is ahead of Hillary Clinton in a national poll.
Did he get a bounce?
Yes.
On a convention? It's typical for a convention to give a little bit of a bounce to the candidate.
Sure.
I don't think that's too surprising.
Everything surprises me.
And really, the polls taken at this point during the cycle can be very misleading. Remember, Mike Dukakis was way out in front of
at some point.
George H.W. Bush. Right after the conventions, he had like a 17-point lead or something like that, and they were measuring the drapes in the White House for the Democrats. So it's hard to tell. You know, I mean, the Republican convention was sort of a nightmare for them. Things were going wrong every single day. And then the last day, things went pretty well. But that speech was really gloomy. And Bill Maher said, if it were any darker, it would have been shot by the police.
Wow.
It's basing everything on fear, which we have. I mean, look at the news. Look what's going on every single day. I wake up to an alert of something that has happened. So we are fearful, but don't capitalize on our fear.
Well, you know, in his speech, Trump did identify some things that are worrisome. I mean, some of the crime things he's throwing out are basically anecdotal. You look at the number of cops who've been shot this calendar year, and it's no more than it was last year. And in fact, it's down from 2 years ago. I mean, these statistics, depending on the coverage and how we see them. Now, obviously, murders are up in Chicago. Shootings are way up in Chicago. That's a problem. It's not the kind of thing that you can ask a president to solve. This is a local issue. This is a mayor in working with a state legislature sometimes that can work on crime problems. It's not, you know, he said, I'm going to appoint the best prosecutors. Like, you don't appoint prosecutors. The president doesn't do that, Mr. Trump. You know, I don't think he even understands what his role is. The thing that was, I mean, and then some of the problems he pointed out, you know, that obviously we're losing manufacturing jobs and wages are stagnant and this recovery has not been good to great segments of the population. It's very frustrated with politicians. But my problem with his speech had to do with its lack of any sort of sense of what's he going to do about it.
He's just going to fix it. It's not how he's going to fix it. He just said whatever the problem
is. Who is that Saturday Night Live character? He was the candidate, and they had him on, and he would say
Tim Calhoun.
Is that
how
what
do
was?
You remember
See,
that?
I knew he would remember this.
That was Will Forte playing Tim Calhoun.
That was the guy reading from his cue card. This was the guy who would say just say fix it. Goes, oh. We got all these problems, and I'll tell you what we got to do. We got to get together and fix it.
But now somebody called in when we brought this up that there were no examples of how you plan on going through with these plans. And someone, remember, they suggested they're saving it. He was saving it for the debates.
Oh, right.
Well, if he is, he's also hiding it from his website. He's only got about 7 pages of stuff on his website. Hillary Clinton's got 40 pages of deeply footnoted policy proposals. I mean, the difference between the candidates in that area is really strong. I don't know when on day one, you know, the crime and violence are going to stop under me. Like, what? That's a crazy thing to say.
Right.
How is that going to happen?
Well, exactly. The first of all question is how's he going to even reduce it? But the idea that he can promise to bring it to zero, he's going to say, I'm going to put coal miners, I'm going to put steel workers back to work in the U.S. Well, how do you do that without kicking off a trade war that would be brutal,
right,
on the middle class and lower income earners. I mean, when you're talking about starting trade wars, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, we have the lifestyle that we have is that we're able to buy relatively cheap clothing, relatively cheap television sets, and so on. All these jobs going overseas has not been a complete negative to,
right,
our standard of living here. And I'm not saying that all these trade-offs have been worth it and that all these trade deals we've struck have been good. I'm not an expert on international trade policy. I know that you wanted to introduce me that way.
Yeah, I do.
And I resisted that
because
don't say international trade expert Eric Zorn, because I just can't live up to that.
Well, there's also the fixing of the bridges and the building of the airports and all those things that he talked about. But to pay for that means not just an increase in taxes, but a tremendous increase in taxes.
Right.
We left that part out. But those things don't pay for themselves.
Exactly. I mean, and this is why, you know, my column on Sundays, I said, I think he's a con man. And I mean that almost in an analytical way. I think he's come in and he said, look, we have big problems,
yeah,
and I can fix them. I'm the guy. I'm your voice. Only I can solve them. I'm not going to tell you how. And it's a classic con game. Like he gets your sense of like, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about. Even though if you stop and listen to him for a minute, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't offer anything. He's just saying, I'll change things.
Scott Baio said he was not a messiah. Eric, was Scott Baio wrong? Is he or is he not a messiah?
Scott Baio a messiah?
No, Scott Baio is definitely not a messiah. But he talked about Donald Trump not being a messiah.
I swear to Chachi.
I'm taking that shrine down in my office.
Oh, you have to take it down. Eric Zorn is here and he's feisty, but you knew that was going to happen. Stick around. More of this in a moment. Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right. Eric Zorn is here of the Chicago Tribune. He stops by every Monday and we talk about things in the news. Just a little bit more on the Republican side, and then we'll switch to tonight's Philadelphia convention for the Democrats. Newt Gingrich is on CNN the other night, and he's talking about Donald Trump's speech at the end. And they call him out on the fact about violent crimes, because even though in some cities, our own, Washington, D.C., and a couple of other major cities around the country, over the last 15 or 20 years, violent crimes are actually declining. They're not going up, they're declining. We have a problem here, and D.C. does, and a few other cities do. But for the most part, those numbers are declining, and they're declining nicely. So Newt Gingrich said it's more important that the perception is that violent crimes are going up, and they call them out on it. And they go, but
go ahead.
But violent crimes are going down, and he dismissed that.
He said it doesn't matter. It matters what people feel.
You're right.
It matters how
more
you feel.
More than the actual crimes themselves.
And you know, politically, he's kind of right.
But what does that say about everything if we're playing more on fear than on actuality? Isn't that tragic?
It is, and I thought that was really infamous. I heard that whole conversation. I was thinking, like, he's gonna come back. He's gonna say, well,
he didn't
in certain areas, but yeah, you're right. And if you look at the high back in the 90s, I mean, the crime slope is just down, and we've had a blip up this year in Chicago. But even in Chicago, even as badly as this year is going, it's still not as bad as it was.
Right.
You know, when things were at their worst. So the idea that perception is what matters, and of course that's what the game of politics is, right? It's about creating these perceptions,
and it is a game.
Which gets back to my whole thing about a con man, which is like he's going to say, "Hey, things are really bad. I'm going to fix them for you." Well, even when things aren't really bad, and the same thing is true of the economic recovery. I mean, there are good things about it, and there are things that have not been as good. But the idea that this country is like in some sort of downward economic spiral is crazy. I mean,
right,
we've had, you know, 78, 79 straight months of job growth. Now, wages are not going up the way we want them to. There are issues. But the thing is that this is a very complicated problem. It's not like you just elect a guy who runs some casinos and he's going to come in and go, okay, well, I'll fix that. We'll get more money. We'll tell China to pay us more.
Right.
Well, China's not going to do that. A lot of these trading partners aren't going to do that. We're in these trade deals, and we're not going to be able to just say, oh, you know, we're not going to abide by that, and we're going to put huge tariffs on your goods, and that's going to be the answer. You can't do that. And the sense that of the limits of what a president can do, the limits of the power. I mean, I hope that this is what comes out during this debate, which is like if Donald Trump has some ideas, he has some policy proposals that differ from Hillary Clinton's, and
we'll
hear them and contrast them and look at their plausibility and their possible effect, then let's hear that. Let's have that debate. But let's not have this entire campaign based on illusory fears and promises that no one, absolutely no one can keep.
Sure.
So that's really the issue that's going on.
For years, Eric, people have said if we had a vice president who played the harmonica, we would be in pretty good shape.
I was one of them who said that.
I've heard you say that. Tim Kaine is a harmonica player, so that seems to all fit into the master plan, doesn't it?
Is he blues? Is he a blues harmonica player?
Or he does a little bit of everything.
Folk? You just play like "This Land Is Your Land."
He does, you know, whatever you want.
Hey guys, I have another update for you.
What's up, Ken?
I apologize. What's on I-55 at Cicero, now it appears the Stevenson is closed in both directions in that area. But we have heard that they have made contact with all the people. It was two semis, two cars. One person went to the hospital in good condition, so it appears everybody is okay. But it's going to be you're going to be sitting there a while. If you're sitting on the Stevenson, it's going to be a while. So all lanes closed in both directions.
Thanks, Kim. Keep us posted on that. What do you expect to have happen in Philadelphia over the next couple of days?
Well, I expect to hear a lot of Trump bashing.
Do you?
Already this morning, W. Wasserman Schultz was booed and hooted
at. Yes, she was.
And of course, there's this whole email scandal.
Who hacked? Who hacked into it to find out that...
They think the Russians,
think the Russians. The FBI is investigating it. The Russians have hacked in before, so it's certainly possible. The other thing is...
Artemi Panarin.
Well, we were talking...
it's Panarin's work.
I tell you what.
They're paying them bread.
Well, we were having a conversation this morning, the editorial board, about what this all means. And you know, the point I made was like, well, we can say right now, well, this doesn't seem like much, or this is, but we don't know what else is coming. I mean, the whole pattern of WikiLeaks is they don't give you everything at once.
Right.
They're going to rip this
out
over
a
few days.
They leak a little at a time, yeah.
And there may be some other stuff, some worse stuff coming. Essentially,
they alluded to just that. They said there's more stuff coming. They know there's more stuff coming.
So for us to say anything about it definitive right now, it's really hard to say. Right now, what we have is clear evidence that the Democratic National Committee was in the tank for Hillary Clinton. That they
favoring
really wanted
her over Bernie.
That wasn't a big surprise. W. Wasserman Schultz, who's the chair of the DNC, was always on the talk shows touting Hillary's candidacy. So it wasn't a huge surprise. The fact that they were looking to exploit the fact that they thought that Sanders might not believe in God.
That was troublesome.
That was
very
troublesome.
They said push him on that because the fact that it's a Jewish guy who would have to admit that he doesn't believe in God, that should be crumbling for him. That's not good.
Wait, I should think Sanders has denied that, and I would hope that wouldn't make a difference, although I know that it would.
Right.
So right now, I don't think there's this huge scandal yet. It's a budding
Although
controversy that
could
get
worse.
This
pushes people to Trump's side saying, see why we don't want a politician?
Well, it also pushes some Bernie Sanders people over to the Green Party or the Libertarian Party. And there's a lot of anger there. And they're going to be protesting in the streets of Philadelphia. The Sanders supporters are still angry about this. And I don't think they're going to. It'll be interesting to hear how the speech that Bernie Sanders gives tonight. And that's the first thing that we're going to be looking for. The rest of the week is star-studded week. Barack Obama's going to speak. Bill Clinton is going to speak. It's going to be Biden and of course, Tim Kaine will speak.
And
play the harmonica. I think maybe he's going to have one of those one-man band things like Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, that would be great.
With the drum.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Bert the Chimney Sweep.
And he's going to talk in a Cockney accent.
Oh, that'll be great.
He's going to speak in Spanish. In a Cockney accent.
And we'll talk about that in the second half of our show, of him speaking Spanish and a certain CNN pundit who had some choice words to say about that.
But it's going to be an interesting week. And I just, you know, Sanders supporters, I respect their passion. I really
do.
But we're down to a choice between two people. One of two people is going to be the next president. And if you go off and you cast your symbolic vote for a Green Party because you're protesting, it may make you feel good. But if enough people do that and Donald Trump is elected, then it's kind of on you. You know, you're the one who's making that decision. So I'm going to be saying that quite a bit, I think, in various forms.
Your votes matter.
Because votes matter and you know, casting symbolic or protest votes, maybe there's a time for that, but certainly not in a general election.
It's about to get real.
When the stakes are high. That's
sure. Eric Zorn. I told you he'd be feisty. I told you. Thanks, Eric. Have a great week. We'll take a quick break, find out what Kim has in the news, and then what's on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Kim. I'm going to have to find another way home because that Stevenson has been blocked for quite some time, and it's going to be a nightmare the whole rest of the day, probably.
People are just sitting on it that can't go anywhere, and you're going to be one of them soon.
Over 17,000 17,000 pounds of paint spilled, so that's
going to probably
take a while to clean up.
How many coats is that? Do we know?
That could do several houses and a couple high-rises,
I would imagine.
Don't you think?
Yep.
Are you sure it's not that artist who likes to do weird things? Not Christoph, the guy who did all the bras across the Grand Canyon.
Oh, no.
Is it Banksy?
Banksy, that's what I was thinking.
Is it Banksy?
He's the graffiti guy.
Yeah.
Well,
there you
graffiti
go.
On the sidewalk. Yeah.
Is it a semi-gloss? Do we know, Kim? What kind of paint is it?
With two semis.
An eggshell.
Eggshell? or as men call it, white.
Well, no, eggshell is the
creamy white.
It's more of a matte finish.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Eggshell, if you look at an egg, it's not really, really shiny.
Right.
So it's
like muted white.
Semi-gloss. Not color. We're talking...
the finish?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what eggshell is.
Yeah.
Color eggshell is... just white.
Right. Yeah. It is. I mean, it.
Winter white, wheat white, Will Wheaton.
You know, when I'm sure at some point you've needed to select a color for a room.
I just painted a room, knitting needles.
Knitting needles. No, I wouldn't know what color that was. Is it silver?
It's gray.
Is it gray?
Grayish blue.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I would have guessed that. Or like a grayish purple, because they also have that color knitting needle as well. Do you knit?
Not at all. But it's a really pretty color.
I love the Benjamin Moore colors. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
This is my old friend Sherwin Williams.
Oh, I like Sherwin Williams as well. And they're good. Nail polish colors on my
Wouldn't
toes.
Wouldn't that be a great job, like thinking of
naming
nail polish
things.
Colors?
Right.
My toes are painted Smokin' Hot. That's the name of the color from OPI.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Smokin' Hot.
Mine are knitting needles. That's the color I went with, is knitting needles.
You talk about the accident on the Stevenson, which has both sides closed still?
Both sides still closed.
For
the good
cleanup.
News is they are... right now, checking all of the cars involved in the accident just to make sure no one, they didn't miss anybody or anything, but it appears just one person went to the hospital in stable condition.
Oh, that's lucky.
And if you see the pictures of this crash, very lucky.
Yeah, that could have been way, way, way,
way
worse.
Way, way worse, yes.
Speaking of videos, and you can find this on the internet. I don't know what you search. I saw it all over Facebook. Kevin, I think you saw it too. Maybe we should put it on our page, Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. Last night when the storms were rolling in, I was at House of Blues, so I didn't know what was happening, but going home, it was pretty wet. There were branches down, and we took the Stevenson home, not the Eisenhower, but there were people on the Eisenhower when lightning struck the platform of the L trains.
Oh, sure.
Right by, what is it, the medical stop, they said, or University Hospital stop. The video of this is unbelievably frightening. It's like a big explosion and then electric trains. So there are like zaps going on all over the place.
Yeah.
And it just crumpled.
Oh, that's not good at all.
So did it get hit by lightning? Is that what the
I think that's what they were saying last
thing
night.
Was?
Yeah.
The video is so scary. And I mean, imagine just driving home on the expressway. There's a storm. It happens all the time here.
Yeah.
And just to see this explosion go off.
Ugh.
And now in this day and age, I would have been fearful that it was something else.
Well.
Seriously.
I guess. But if there's lightning and thunder all around you, wouldn't you just surmise it must be lightning?
Yeah, but if you see this video and the explosion, it doesn't make sense.
Mm.
Like something gets hit by lightning. I know the electric trains, that's why it went up. But it was unbelievable. Another thing I saw on Facebook, a video somebody posted of... the vice presidential running mate of Hillary Rodham Clinton, Tim Kaine.
Harmonica Tim?
Yeah, is that what you're calling him
now? I call him Harmonica Tim.
He was speaking in Spanish and doing it quite well.
Yeah, he's very good at it.
And then there was this CNN pundit who had some things to say about it. Her name is Scotty Nell Hughes, and until today I'm like, who?
Yeah, Scotty Nell Hughes.
A girl.
Right.
And she was criticizing Virginia Senator Tim Kaine for speaking in Spanish, saying it contracted with the past week's Republican convention in which, quote, I didn't have to get a translator.
Oh.
So there is audio of her.
And for the record, he doesn't always speak in Spanish, but depending on who the crowd is, he will speak in Spanish.
You know, you're right. And I think it's impressive. Melania can speak, what, like five languages or something?
Yeah, something like that. Right.
Which I didn't know until recently.
Yeah.
Good for her. Rosetta Stone, good for
you. Yeah, it turned out to be a good thing.
And so Tim Kaine was speaking in Spanish, which, you know, I didn't take issue with. I thought, cool for him.
He
can speak in another language well. And then you look up and it's like next to Spain, I think I read. This is one of the countries that has the most Spanish-speaking people
sure
in
of
it.
Right.
So it doesn't seem weird that he's speaking in Spanish. Again, I was very impressed that he did it so fluently. But Scotty Nell Hughes had a different view when she was talking to Wolf Blitzer.
Continuing to divide us. You know, I appreciate him having multicultural and speaking Spanish. I think that's a great idea. And we can all bring out our languages. Melania could come out and speak her five different languages as well. But what Mr. Trump did, he spoke in a language that all Americans can understand. That is English. And that is one good thing that I thought that was a great thing that, you know, we saw during the... I didn't have to get a translator for anything that was going on at the RNC this week. And I'm hoping I'm not going to have to kind of start brushing up back on my Dora the Explorer to understand some of the speeches given this week. I think that...
Isn't that just terrible?
She left the brush up on her Dora the Explorer.
She went on to explain that she has kids and that's, you know, Dora the Explorer is a female Latina Nickelodeon cartoon, which I watched with the kids. Backpack, backpack. It was nice and cute to learn some words in Espanol
sure.
as you're watching it.
She kind of contradicted herself, too. She talked about how great it is that Tim Kaine has the ability to speak Spanish, but if you're not going to use that ability, what good is it? So he was in a crowd that had Hispanic people, so he spoke some Spanish. It's not a bad thing.
No, but she says this isn't the place for it.
Oh, it's not. What is the place? Spain?
Yes.
Mexico? Yeah.
She has been eaten up on Twitter, of course, for those
by
comments.
Dora the Explorer fans?
No, but she went on to explain. I'm trying to find her.
She said the exact, like at first she was praising him. I think that's great that he can speak Spanish, but that's not the time. That's not where you do. You don't just go out there and speak Spanish, for heaven's sakes. Dios mío. I was doing my Dora the Explorer
that
impression.
Was very
did you like
good.
That? Thank you.
Swiper, no swiping. I watch that all the time.
Yeah.
But people were just really criticizing her, rightly so, on Twitter, and then she went on to, you know, say, well, I watched Dora the Explorer with my kids, and that's, I just meant that I'm going to have to learn Spanish.
It doesn't mean she has to learn Spanish. If she can speak it, good for her. He wasn't doing anything that out of the ordinary.
No, and I thought it was pretty cool, and then, just so you know, at the Republican National Convention on Wednesday, Kentucky State Senator Ralph Alvarado spoke in Spanish in parts of his speech.
No. So, what's happening?
But she said...
Where is America going?
At the RNC, everyone spoke in English. I didn't need a translator, but she was actually wrong because there was some. What is going on with this world where you can just openly show hatred for something like another race?
It being able to speak a foreign language is a positive. It's not
totally.
A negative. And it doesn't mean that if Tim Kaine becomes our vice president, that we'll all have to learn to speak Spanish or we'll be lost in the shuffle. That's so funny.
Isn't that? I thought you'd appreciate
very
this.
Very funny.
Well, that's what's going on in this world. And I think 3 o'clock is the kickoff.
For the convention?
I think so. So how perfect did that coincide with the start of the Rokan show with Anna DeBlantis?
You think it was premeditated?
No, I just think it was a brilliant mistake.
It's a coincidence. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have a lot more to discuss with you. Stick around. It's Bill E. Wendy on WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. It's WGN. You can call us at 312-981-7200. Please don't take shots at Dora the Explorer. We will not stand for that.
No, can I read you her apology?
Yeah.
I actually had
Please.
It, but I didn't know this was really her apology because it's so trite. I
haven't heard the apology, but I do give her credit for at least apologizing. I think that's good. I haven't heard the apology yet. Is it a half-hearted apology?
Yeah. Again, her quote, basically, what Mr. Trump did, he spoke in a language all Americans can understand. We're talking about...
But that's not true, because there are people who live here who don't speak English. I know that's hard to believe, but there's a small percentage of the population in the United States that don't speak English, so she's wrong on that.
And then Scotty Nell Hughes went on to say, I didn't have to get a translator for anything that was going on at the RNC this week, and I'm hoping I'm not going to have to start brushing up on my Dora the Explorer to understand some of the speeches given this week.
I hate the fact that I love the reference so much, because what she said is awful and hateful, but I just like that she invoked the name of Dora the Explorer to illustrate her point.
Well, here is what her apology is, and I am not accepting it.
All right.
I never meant... Plus, she's using the number 2. instead of, like Prince did.
Oh, like Prince, yeah. All right.
And that dilutes it a little bit in my mind, too. I never meant to cause hurt, rather attempt to reference a cute tool I learned / taught Spanish to my own children, obviously failed. I was wrong. She didn't make it sound like she was trying to be cute.
That's an awful apology.
It's not even an apology.
That's like a textbook example of how not to apologize.
I never meant to cause hurt, rather attempt to reference a cute tool I learned and taught Spanish to my own children. Obviously failed. I was wrong. She was not trying to be cute. That was hateful.
I don't think so. Right. Right.
And now all of us, and poor Dora the Explorer, where does she stand on this?
Well, she should not be brought into this. And to your credit, you're absolutely right. If she had used the number two even one time in there, it waters down the apology. It makes it a little too flippant, you know? But the fact that she used it three different times, what's that all about?
And she had extra characters left. She could have fit the word T-O instead of the number two.
It doesn't take up much more space than the number two.
I think she did mean to cause hurt, though, didn't she?
She, of course, did.
And
yeah.
We learned this on this show, how to apologize. I never meant to hurt you. You're not ever supposed to say that.
Right. So she said a slight version of that. She brought her kids into it. I taught my kids how to speak Spanish, so I'm a good person. I taught my kids to speak
through
Spanish.
Through Dora the Explorer.
Right. Whose name she tried to sully.
She totally did,
That's
didn't
not going
to
work on us. You can't, right. You can't pull the wool over our eyes with Dora the Explorer. We're too smart for you.
Well, the hate continues.
Her parents were big Star Trek fans. They named her after Scotty.
And wasn't there a Nell on Little House in the
Prairie? Oh, yeah, there was. Yes, there was.
So, and then I was watching Tim Kaine as he got up when they were in Florida.
He's dynamic. I'll give him that.
He is dynamic.
No, he's not.
No, he
is
kinda,
he? I have not I seen know. Him be even close to dynamic.
I like, you're right. He's not dynamic. He's pleasant and he.
Right. He's far more pleasant than he is dynamic. And then he's got the harmonica.
No, I didn't hear the harmonica thing. I've just heard that through hearsay. He can play the
harmonica.
Yeah,
he plays. He plays the harmonica.
He just didn't do much for me.
Yeah, I know. I was expecting somebody with a little bit more flash. I'm not saying that he would be bad as the vice president. I just thought there'd be a pick that was a little bit more of a jaw-dropper, like, oh, all right, now we're talking. And I'd only heard of him once or twice before. He's got the name of a guy that if you were making a movie and you had a vice president in your movie, you'd go, I don't know, Vice President Kaine, I guess. Let's go with Kaine. Let's go with, I don't know, Tim Kaine, I guess. You know, it's like the product of a screenwriter would come up with that name, and that's his name.
Yeah,
so,
you're right. And
Citizen Kaine.
I just expected more dazzle.
Yeah, I don't think he's high on the dazzle factor. He's much more like the guy who lives down the block whose name you're not sure of.
That's exactly it.
Right.
And he seems like a nice enough
he
man.
He seems like a nice man.
He has some political history. Former senator from Virginia, was it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, yeah. I had not heard his name. I had not seen him. I was expecting something greater, I guess. It seems like a weird choice, in my opinion.
Yeah, I've heard people debate back and forth what the pros and cons of him seem to be, and they keep saying what a pleasant guy he is. So, you know, if you want a pleasant vice president, I guess that's your guy.
I don't know about pleasant. He gets an F rating from the NRA.
Well, but that's because he doesn't want everybody to have a gun.
A perfect score from Planned Parenthood, despite his personal opposition to abortion, which he says is a matter of his Roman Catholic faith.
Yeah.
How's that going to work?
Well, that's interesting because he's kind of torn then, isn't he? Between his political affiliation and his religious affiliation.
I'm trying to find out more facts about him.
All I need to know is, does he play the harmonica, yes or no? And he does.
Well, is he going to whip out the harmonica then tonight?
So. No, I don't think he can do it tonight, but I think if he shows up on like if he's on Jimmy Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon or Stephen Colbert, then you bring the harmonica.
And that's who should have him so we could get to know him. I just expected...
You know what this means next time? John Popper can be the vice president.
Dude,
that guy can play the harmonica.
If that was the case, I would vote for whoever's running with John Popper. I'm a big fan. He's a nice, nice guy.
Right.
And can play really well.
Right.
Hi, Pauline.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. We only have a second here. What did you want to say?
Okay. I just wanted to tell you guys, I was thinking the same thing, like how you were thinking about him. But when he started talking over the weekend, when Hillary introduced him,
yeah,
I went away. I think he's going to be just fine. I really like him.
But he's more, wouldn't you agree with us, he's far more pleasant than he is dynamic, right?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Very low-key, but I think he's going to be fine. I really liked him after he started talking.
Are you anxious to see? I keep thinking about what the debate will be like between he and Mike Pence. I'm kind of anxious to see those two at odds.
Too, because I think it's, I know they both call themselves kind of boring, but. Yeah.
It is going to be very bland.
Right. But on the same line, I think they're kind of two different boring. You know what I mean?
Right.
They're two different boring people.
Yeah. Well, that'll be fun to watch.
Thank you, Pauline. We have to take a quick break. I don't know what to expect. I just wanted someone with more pizzazz, I guess. It's Hillary Clinton,
I know.
For gosh sakes.
I thought there'd be somebody shinier. Let's see what happens. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Veronica, thanks very much. Of course, Veronica will keep you posted, keep all of us posted on any new developments in this this traffic situation. Very, very rough day on the roadways. I have some stories, Wendy, and the thing that they have in common is that they all are about celebrities, famous people. So can we do another episode of Marianne's Show Business Report to the Nation?
Damn you. I was just going to ask if this was Marianne's Show Business Report to the Nation. All right,
yes, it is. She left that to us.
Well, she's been very disappointed then.
Yes, she's been horribly disappointed because we've only done it once or twice since their departure. Let's start out with this story. I'm going to throw a name out at you, and this was a name of a man that was one time a very popular guy on TV, but we haven't seen much of him lately, and that is John Gosselin. Do you remember John Gosselin?
Kate and John plus eight.
John and Kate plus eight. That would be your John Gosselin. Now, I'm going to just tell you a little bit, and then there's a reason I'm telling you this.
All right.
It turns out we haven't seen much of John Gosselin lately.
And he's a cutie.
Well, yeah, I guess as a side note, you could say that I guess he's a cutie.
He was so cute and she was mean.
Yeah, but then he went and cheated on her.
Oh,
so
see,
I'm more on her side.
I don't know.
I'm on Kate's side.
He cheated on her?
Yes.
Why haven't you been doing Marianne's Showbiz Report to the Nation? Because I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah. He was, really? Yeah, yeah.
She forced him out.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of people share that same opinion that he was always mean to her, or I'm sorry, that she was always mean to him, but I don't think that gives him a license to just go out and cheat.
No.
Do you? I don't think so. Well, it turns out there's a lot of strife in the Gosselin family, as you would imagine. John has said that of the eight kids, he doesn't see four of them. They just don't come by anymore. They don't want to see their dad anymore. That Kate has poisoned their mind against her.
I bet she has.
Well, there was a story about him last week because it turns out he's been working at a TGI Fridays. And a lot of people were taking shots at him saying, oh, look at this guy. One time he was a TV star and now he's working at a TGI Fridays. I'm not going to do that.
No, because he's working.
He's working.
Trying
right?
to provide for his eight kids.
Yeah.
Or four, because four don't
four,
talk.
Four will not talk to him. Four refuse to talk to him. But I know in a situation, despite the fact that at one time he was a reality TV star, at some point you realize that well's going to dry up and you have to do something. And I'm sure to him, that was quite a step backwards.
Yeah.
But he's not just laying there. At least he's working somewhere.
You should not put reality and TV star in the same sentence, by the way.
Because
that is just not right in life.
Well, here's the reason I said at the beginning, there's a reason I'm bringing this up, and I will present it to you now. I think when the book is written about the good and bad of anything reality TV related, I think somebody way smarter than me will figure out that being on a reality television show is really not a good thing for you. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, although I've toyed around with it.
If somebody came to you today and said, here's what we want to do, Wendy. We want to bring cameras to your home and follow you and your family around 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Your answer would be what?
I would say no, but I would think about it because I just would like to.
Why would you think about it?
Because I feel like I am very open and honest about my family. And
right.
I think a lot of people put on airs about their family. And I would like to help people to realize that, you know, dysfunction is pretty common in every family in varying degrees. That's why I would want to do it, to help people.
Do you think, and that's admirable, but do you think in the long run this would be good for the relationship you have with your kids?
Nope, that's why
husband?
I wouldn't do it.
It wouldn't be, would
I? I wouldn't do it. I'd rather just write a book. So that's what I'm going to do.
You should do that. A pop-up book. Don't you think, though, that if you look at, and John and Kate is just one of those situations, it, when that show first started, my daughters would watch it, and then I would find myself watching 5 minutes here and 10 minutes there, and I thought at the beginning, well, this is a nice premise. These are two simple people. These are not TV stars. These are just two simple people who happen to have had a lot of kids. They had, for people who don't know, they had twins, and then a couple years later, they had six kids. So all of a sudden, as the title implies, they had eight kids. But just the mere fact that there were always, always cameras around, I think that does long-term damage to you. Look at all the Real Housewives of every city in America.
I haven't watched that show either. The only thing I watch is Big Brother, which is such a small scale and compared to these shows.
But even that one, even Big Brother and even The Bachelor and The Bachelorette,
yeah.
Don't you think that if you look at them over time, and I mean, this is still a new concept, reality television, but I think in years and years and years, when everybody at some point has their own show, people are going to look back and go, but the price you pay.
It just, I feel like in a weird way that like new reality shows, you don't pay as big a price because everybody's doing it now.
Yeah, but you're still under the scrutiny of the camera no matter what you do.
Yeah.
They're I hate to burst everybody's bubble. They're looking to not so much ruin you, but they want strife. They
Absolutely.
Want conflict. So if you don't have any, they're going to find a way for that to exist because it's not interesting if there's no conflict.
And, I mean, is it really a reality show? No, it's
no.
scripted, most of them, aren't they?
Well, it's not scripted in the terms of they're handed a script, but they're told, I can't remember which of the Real Housewives because I don't know who's who on those shows, but there was a story.
Who watches the Real Housewives in your family?
My wife and one of my daughters does.
Why? What's wrong with
them? I can't figure
it
out.
That's so not like
them. It's so not like them. And I always, this is what I always say, and I can hear their eyes rolling in their head when I say this. Whenever they're watching one of those shows, and they do, they watch it, and they're so much smarter than that. They just are. And then I always go, if you knew that woman in real life, would you hang out with her? No.
But they'd spy on her. If that woman lived next door and she had something going on, you'd spy on her. You'd probably gossip in the neighborhood about her.
But not for like an hour at a time and then have Andy Cohen come in and interview her.
I've never watched an episode of any of those shows.
They're on the show and then they fight and fight and fight over everything. No matter what's going on, they fight about it. And then Andy Cohen sits down with them and then they talk about it and then they fight again.
Like, see, that would make me uncomfortable.
Those two women were just fighting with each other and now they're sitting down and they're fighting again. And everyone in my family goes, yeah, how about that?
Are they really rude to each other and stuff?
Terribly.
See,
horribly.
I can't watch that. That makes me really uncomfortable.
It's sad. It's so sad. And some of them, like you would know them, like Kim Richards, who was Prudence on Nanny and the Professor. Remember the little girl from Nanny and the Professor? She's on one of those shows. She's on one of the Real Housewives shows. And
times must be tough for her, huh?
Yeah, because she's got they all have all kinds of problems. Some of them are in jail. Some of them are cheating on their husbands. Some of them.
Judas's or something had the mom was in jail first, or the dad went first, and now the mom's
in. Del Judas.
That's all I know from reading. But they watch that?
Yeah, and I'm shocked by it. It doesn't fit them at all.
It does seem really weird.
I know.
Hang on one second. Hey, Lori?
Yeah.
You have been to some filming for a reality show?
Yeah, Real Housewives of Orange County.
Wait, how can you be on the filming? Don't they just shoot it in their houses?
The funny part is, so we were in Las Vegas for my husband's 40th surprise party.
Yeah.
And so two of the daughters were filming. The episode was mainly about... I can't remember what her name is. But anyhow, so they were filming there. Some of our guys got, you know, got to talk to the girls for a while. They didn't make the cut of the film, but because there weren't enough, you know, bodies, they needed it to look more crowded.
At a casino or something?
Yeah, we were at the Green Valley Ranch.
Okay. Oh, all right.
Yeah, so they needed more bodies. The bar upstairs wasn't very crowded, and they had noticed from the pool that day, they ran back into us and said, hey, if you bring your whole group up, we'll buy you guys a couple drinks. We just need to, you know, film in here.
Yeah.
And so they ended up filming with two of my good girlfriends. And so it was the two daughters on the show and then my two girlfriends.
Did they get in a fight and they punch each other and pull hair or anything?
That would have been great. But, no, it's reality shows, you know. No, but what happened was they filmed with them for probably 45 minutes, and I was 10 feet away. I heard the whole conversation. The girls, the daughters on the show were super nice. My friends had a great time. Everybody seemed to get along really, really well. And so, you know, a couple months later, they called my two friends and said, hey, you guys made the cut. You're in. And, of course, when you film with them, you have to sign off all your rights.
You sign a waiver.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. So this, it came on. Everybody's watching it. And they cut. They edited the filming so much. What happened was it made my two girlfriends looked like they were totally hitting on the other two girls.
Oh, no.
And the other two girls were so uncomfortable. And, I mean, it was
so they edited it to tell a different story than when it was actually filmed.
Oh, 1,000%. It was horrible.
Well, that's not reality at all. I feel we've been taken.
My burst my bubble, Lori.
That's disappointing, but not shocking.
Right. Well, one of my girlfriends had said, you know, they were just chatting about stuff. And one of my girlfriends had said, oh, my gosh, you have such a cute outfit on and blah, blah, blah. They cut that where my girlfriend said that. And then the daughter on the show has this blank look on her face like she's uncomfortable. And yeah. They did the cricket sounds. Like she was totally uncomfortable that my friend was supposedly hitting on
her. Oh, and that never happened.
That's crazy. Well, thank you for pulling.
It was terrible.
Thank you for pulling the curtain back. Have your friends recovered and have they learned never to be in a reality series again?
Yes, and poor things. They were huge fans of the show. That's why they were so excited. And, yeah.
It ruined it.
It was horrible.
That's too bad. Lori, thank you for the call.
Thank you for sharing that.
A friend of mine worked as a cameraman on two different shows, and he said it's standard on the reality shows to do these reaction shots where you're not really reacting to anything. The camera's just on you, and they say you've just heard something that's devastating, and then they just put the camera on you, but they're not hearing anything, and then they just insert them wherever they want. So I've seen that. Like when The Apprentice was in its first or second season, I would watch it, and you would see somebody go, well, I know something about Gary Busey, and it's going to really ruin your thoughts about Gary Busey. And then there's a reaction shot of Gary Busey looking, you know, with his eyes wide, like, uh-oh, here it comes. Here's my big secret. But it's all out of context. Those reaction shots are just shot separately. They're not reacting to anything.
Well, I don't watch them. I watch Big Brother, and to be honest with you, I have them all on the DVR. I haven't even watched this season yet. But I will.
That'll be fun to binge watch.
I do. Actually, it's more fun to binge watch for me. I'd love to see what Julie Chen is wearing.
Oh, my God. All right, let's take a quick break, and then more of Marianne's show business report to the nation. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Love them.
This is Marianne's show business report to the nation. I'm Bill Left. That's Wendy Snyder. Some celebrity news. We just told you about John Gosselin and Kate Gosselin, and I didn't realize, just really quickly to close this off, I didn't realize she still has a show on TV with her kids. Did you know that?
Kate Plus Eight?
It's just, I don't know what it's called. It doesn't say. It just says they're talking about John Gosselin and his downward spiral and the fact that he has been working in a TGI Fridays, although he says he's going to quit that job soon. But I'm not ripping him on that. I just think if he's working, that's a good thing.
219 says John was an IT professional prior to the kids. Now he's just a bum and blaming Kate while she raises his 8 kids.
Maybe there's something to that.
She had some stuff too, though. I mean, didn't she change completely?
Yeah. She,
physically and emotionally?
It was a very...
Got to her head.
It did.
And her face and her lips.
But even, this is the sad part of, this is the saddest part of this. Even after it totally destructed her family, and it did, she and her husband split up, there's fights with the kids, she still decided she wanted to have another television show. She's on TLC right now with the kids. Like, once you saw your family implode, wouldn't you go, well, obviously reality television isn't in our best interest. I got to find something else to do. But she didn't. She found another show, another reality show.
People are so driven by money. I mean, seriously, she probably decided, I want to have this lifestyle going.
That's terrible, though.
Like, for the sake of your family.
When they split up, all I kept thinking to myself is, I bet if they didn't lend themselves to this reality show, they would still be together and their family would be happy. But because they decided to sell out and go, well, let's be on reality television and see what that's all like. Once that happened, you just saw it coming apart. You know, don't you think they'd still be together if it wasn't for cameras being in their way all the time?
I got to be honest with you. I never even heard of them. I never watched a minute of the show. And
it was compelling in the beginning because, and maybe it's because my wife and I had twins and we saw how our lives changed. I mean, every baby's going to change your life, but just the fact that we went from 0 to 2 was a big deal. So then you saw these people who went from 2 to 8 overnight, and you go, wow, that will change things.
I have a friend, a couple who have 8 kids, so to me, I just watch them. And they're doing great.
Sit on a lawn chair in their living room and watch them? What's wrong with that? Here's another story from the world of celebritydom. Michael Caine, now the headline says ISIS forces Michael Caine to change his name, but that's not completely true. Nobody from ISIS went to Michael Caine's house and said, you, sir, Mr. Michael Caine, we've decided at our last ISIS meeting, you need to change your name. That's not exactly how it went. Here's what he says. The legendary British actor Michael Caine, who was born Maurice Micklewhite.
He was?
Yeah. Did you know that?
No.
I remember hearing that and thinking to myself, I think that's a better name for him.
I don't.
Because that's more of a British-y sounding name. Maurice Micklewhite. He sounds like he's in David Copperfield, doesn't he?
Yes.
The legendary British actor Michael Caine, who was born Maurice Micklewhite, has legally changed his name to the show business moniker that he adopted back in 1954. So he is now legally Michael Caine. Like, for a long time, when you'd see him in movies, you saw that it's Michael Caine, but he kept the name Maurice Micklewhite, but not anymore. He says, because of the rise in airport security checks prompted by the Islamic State. Here's what he says. An airport security guard would say, hello, Michael Caine. When you do him, you have to take a breath in between every word. And suddenly, I give him a passport with a different name on it, Caine said. I could stand there for an hour, so I changed my name. So it was confusing when he would go to the airport because people would know him. They'd go, hey, it's Michael Caine. And then he hands them ID, and it says Maurice Micklewhite, and ISIS was licking their chops. I don't know why they would sell this as ISIS for it.
I know.
ISIS did not force Michael Caine to change
his name. No, the hassles of the TSA forced him to change his name.
That would have been a better headline.
And the confusion of Macklemore. That's too close.
Not Macklemore. Oh. Micklewhite. The 83-year-old actor began his acting career on the Sussex stage as Michael Scott.
From The Office?
From The Office. He was required to change his handle after moving to London, where another Michael Scott was already treading the boards. During a Herald...
Who wrote this?
I don't know. Somebody from the world of sports, because I think that's a basketball term, treading the boards. During a harried call to his agent, he looked outside of the telephone box, and he saw a poster of the Humphrey Bogart naval drama, The Caine Mutiny, and thus was born Michael Caine.
Really?
How about that? What if the poster was for the movie with Six You Get Egg Roll? What would his name be? He would be Sir Michael Eggroll.
That's not a good name for an actor. All right,
it makes me hungry.
It makes everybody hungry. All right, we need to take a break. This has been Marianne's Show Business Report to the Nation. We're going to get sued. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Veronica, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. You can reach us several ways. One number does it all, really. 312-981-7200. Call us there or text us there. I don't know if you've noticed this, but it's very fashionable lately to blame pretty much everything on millennials. You can blame stuff on them. You can pin anything you want on them. You can talk about how lazy they are. There's the misconception that they're just sitting around being lazy all the time, the millennials. That's not the case.
I don't like the hatred for millennials.
I don't like it.
I want to like it, but I can't.
No, it's incorrect.
It is incorrect.
They're our future. I believe the children are our future. Treat them well.
I don't believe that.
No.
Not the millennials.
No.
It's just a different time now. Like, Kevin works really super hard.
I've seen him working hard.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Not lately, but in the past, like when he was up for the job, remember how hard he used to work?
It worked.
All right, well, maybe you don't work hard, but you give the illusion that you're working hard.
Right.
But, you know, I don't consider him a slacker.
Not at all.
I don't know why millennials get busted all the time.
I don't get it either. Because they're too little to defend themselves. Because they're too busy putting on hipster hats. Over at Huffington Post, Wendy, they talk about the things. Now, in this part, even though I don't believe in pinning everything on people who are millennials, you can't help the era that you're born in, can you? You can't help that. But they say that there's a whole bunch of things that Gen Xers, that was the generation before millennials.
Is that us?
I think you and I fall into the bracket. We're between baby boomers and Gen Xers. We're right. There's like this 8-month period where there was just no title.
We don't have a group to belong to.
We don't have a group. We're groupless.
We probably identify more with boomers.
Maybe about some things. Maybe. But they say that there are things that we experienced in the past that your kids today, what they call the millennials, and then they wince, millennials, like that. Those people won't have any idea what they're missing out on. Can I give you some examples?
Yes, please do.
All right. These are things that your Gen Xers and your baby boomers were well aware of. Did it maybe on a daily basis with some of these. But the millennial kids, they have other things. Passing notes. Remember when you were in school, you'd want to pass a note to somebody? Tell that guy I like him. Tell that girl I don't like her. That kind of stuff. You'd give somebody a note. They'd give it to somebody. They'd give it to somebody. A couple minutes later, that person would have the note.
That always made me nervous, though, because you had to trust somebody who was like in the middle of you and your friend, and you didn't know if you could really trust them, and why should you trust
them? They'd read it.
Or they could just get you in trouble, too.
Right.
I was not a big, you know, I'd walk by to go sharpen my pencil and then drop it on the desk.
Right.
That's the way to do it.
Now we can just tweet about what Mr. Johnson's wearing.
That's what I mean. Now you just tweet it, or you text it, or you put it on some kind of social media.
Except you can't, I mean, in school, you're allegedly not supposed to have your phones.
When my daughters started high school, they would tell me about this teacher that nobody liked. And I'd say, why doesn't anybody like that teacher? And they go, he doesn't even let us text in class. And I go,
I love
well,
that
that's
teacher.
The best teacher
yes.
ever then.
They can't even have them. I mean, at junior high, for sure, they can't have them. And there was one time even in high school where Michael texted me. It was 3:15, so school was over.
Yeah.
And he goes, I'm not supposed to be texting you. I'm still in the school. And I'm like, well, walk outside.
Right.
I mean, but at that point, who cares?
I know.
But the passing notes was kind of fun.
It was fun.
I'm going to pass you one before the day's over.
I would make it in the shape of a football,
and I would
flick it like I was kicking a field goal.
Yep. How many times did the teacher pick up that one?
I don't remember ever getting caught. It's
in
possible,
a Catholic
but I
school.
Yeah,
you did
I don't
not...
remember because we would time it like we would all kind of know. We had mostly nuns teaching us, not all, but they weren't. I know this will sound derogatory. I don't mean it to be. They weren't as
hip?
Fleet of foot as you would want a teacher.
Yeah,
like we
knew they trip on the robes.
Possibly.
They had to be careful.
We knew if one of the nuns was going to the board to turn around to write something, we knew like what her speed was. Like we'd go, okay, she's just turning around now. I got 9 seconds. I can get a note to somebody. You know, we would have it calculated. We had a card, like a tipping card that you'd bring to a restaurant.
Okay,
Sister Dolores turning around. She's good for 7 seconds. We would just know. What about this one? Now, kids of all ages did this for years and years, but maybe not so much anymore. Doing book reports using actual books.
Oh, they still do it.
No, because now it's like an electronic e-reader. Would a kid still get a book? Would
my
a kid
still
read
get
a book?
Books.
Okay, good. I hope so.
Yeah, they don't. Because part of the plan is they're teaching them how to underline things and make notes. So they have
so they
to
use
have
real
a
books.
Physical copy
okay, good.
Of a book.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Is there still Cliff's Notes? That still exists, right?
I don't know, but you know how many things that saved me on?
I'm sure.
I read books, but I didn't always finish them in the allotted time.
Oh, yeah. So Cliff's Notes to the rescue.
Loved it.
Here's another one for a kid today. Maybe it's not a big deal. It used to be for us, practicing your cursive.
They still teach cursive.
They do?
As of Dylan, who's now 13, he learned cursive. And
oh,
he might have been the last class to.
Good.
And, you know, a lot of people were saying, why do you need to learn cursive, including my son Dylan? And I said, so you know how to do your autograph.
Right. Oh, smart. That's the right answer to that.
Because otherwise, how do you know?
Right.
And you don't, like, I don't really write in cursive anymore. I print everything except for my name.
Yeah.
If I'm signing my name. But if you don't learn cursive, how do you read cursive?
Right. So true.
I should
true.
Be a teacher.
So that is still a class in grade school.
I
it's
think
still
so.
A class.
312-981-7200. I'm a little curious, but I think they still are teaching cursive.
Did you have, like at our school at St. Damien in Oak Forest, we had these books, these workbooks.
Yes.
And we had a special pen that was yellow, gray, and purple. And when you colored, when you did cursive and it was proper, it came in gray. But if it was improper, it was either yellow or purple. I can't remember which.
I know we had a notebook with three lines that you would have to write. So
right.
you could put like the lower part of the D and then the upper part would go on the top. So it was sectioned off the line that you wrote on. And there was a pen that was shaped almost like a fountain pen.
That's the same one.
Like you dip in ink.
Wasn't it yellow and gray and purple? Ours were yellow, gray, and purple.
Ours were red or blue.
Oh.
But it was.
But it did the same thing? If you got it right, it did it one color?
No, it didn't.
No?
No, it's not the different color. It was just that it was thicker on the bottom and was more tapered on the top.
Yeah, ours were those.
So you would learn how to hold a pen properly,
oh.
I guess.
Oh.
I don't know.
Oh. Now, the problem we had with that was, you know how everybody does a capital Q differently? Like,
it's
there's
like
no two
the
people.
Number two.
Right.
And why is that?
I don't know.
It's
but there's no two people on the planet.
Not a Q.
Nobody does the letter Q the same. Everybody on the planet does it differently. So if you didn't do it just like our teacher, it was wrong. Right.
Really? Because we had second grade Miss Korsfeld, and it started with a Q.
Oh, that's not fair.
And I got that wrong every time. I would put a Q, and it's
right.
like, no, it's the number two. No,
we had the
that's
same
a
thing,
two.
Because Joel Quinville was our penmanship teacher. He was good, too. Fiery.
You messed that up again.
He'd get very upset with us. All right, we'll take a quick break. More of this sort of thing. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We were talking about things that millennials don't really experience like we did in school. And one of them was cursive writing. And I know Dylan learned it, and he's 13. So I wondered if kids behind him have learned it.
Mm-hmm.
And is this Paulina?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Paulina. Are teachers still teaching cursive?
Yes, our school does teach it as of second grade, second semester. And first grade, kindergarten, you would do manuscript or Danilian, which has the tails, but they've switched out of that to do plain manuscript, which is there's no tails. It's with black letters, but
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's you know how the letters can be a little more flowery and curly.
Yeah, but a Y has a tail. Oh, you mean like a lowercase?
Like an N would have a little tail, so you learn how to connect it to the M or other letters.
Oh, okay.
Most don't use that. They just use the plain manuscript. No tails, just you know, simple printing.
So it's but like kind of cursive printing. It's not all connected and run together.
Right. It's called Danilian, but some schools use it, some don't, but we did. But our second grade teachers start using it, I think, second semester.
All right, good to know.
First off, I want to say
but it's something very important because it does open another part of the brain that helps you connect with other things.
Oh, yeah, I bet. I can imagine.
They've had, you know, information on that if you lose, you know, penmanship, that it does something to the brain, that it opens up another part of the brain that when you're teaching the cursive writing and connections. So it's still important. I know a lot of schools have canceled it, but there's so many schools. I think most parochial schools teach it too.
And do the kids, are they happy to learn this, Pauline, or do they just say, well, we're just going to text in our lives. We don't need to actually write stuff out. How do they feel about it?
Yeah, you know, actually my name is Helena with an H.
Oh, sorry. Oh,
okay, sorry.
No problem. But yes, they do it because it's kind of like a stepping stone. Go, okay, well, next year you got to print correctly to learn your cursive. And
right.
So, yeah, it is. Like, we kind of make a big deal about it. Just, you know, feeding them even from first grade when I used to teach first grade. Oh, you got to do this nicely because in second grade you're going to learn to do this. So it was a big, you know, making a big stepping stone for that, too.
Excellent. Well, that's good to know. Thank you, Helena. And, Bill, you asked if kids get excited about it. Sue, your child cannot wait to learn cursive?
Yeah, it's so funny that just 30 seconds prior to bringing this up, he said, I want to learn how to, I can't wait to learn cursive next year.
Oh, that's exciting.
And that's third grade for him.
He's going to be a calligrapher.
You could ask him why.
I'm sorry, what was the last part?
I said he's sitting next to me. You could ask him why he wants
put that,
to learn.
Put that kid on the phone. I want to talk to that kid.
What's his
name?
His name is Danny.
All right. We'll talk to Danny.
You're on, Danny. I want to learn how to write cursive because it's like faster. And my friend Will, his parents, I think, taught him when he was in first grade and he lived in California. And I just think it's really interesting.
It is really interesting. And the girls love it. Did you know that, Danny?
Don't
girls
listen to
are
him,
impressed
Danny.
By that.
It is faster, though. Like, if you're taking notes and stuff,
sure.
It totally works. And I bet, Danny, once you learn it, at some point in your life, you'll kind of mix them up and do some printed letters and some cursive letters. That's what most people do.
Yeah. Danny, what do you want to be when...
Go ahead.
We lost Danny, but what is his goal? What does he want to do at some point? Is it a job where he'll need to know how to write?
Dinosaur Bones with my best friend.
You'll need to know how to write then.
And I might write in cursive so it goes faster. So if we find some, I could just write in fast.
That's a good idea.
Danny, you sound like a great little boy. What grade are you going into?
I'm going into third.
All right. Stay in school.
Well, congratulations. And Sue, you got a great little kid there.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
He seems like a good kid.
I kind of have a crush on him.
He's
so sweet. Come
weird.
On, he's going to go
weird.
Look for dinosaurs
no,
with
I
his
know.
Friend Will. Tell me how that was
that's
not the
adorable.
Cutest thing you've ever heard.
That's adorable. I agree.
Oh, my God, that was so cute.
Here's another one. These are things that the millennial kids will not experience, and it's their
looking
loss.
For dinosaurs?
No, you can always look for dinosaurs, Wendy. That's never going to go out of vogue.
So cute.
Getting up to change the channel on the TV. Now, we've talked about this before. There was a time where your parents would say to you, get up and put on channel 5. And you'd go, well, you get up and put on channel 5.
I never said that.
And then you couldn't go out for the rest of the summer.
Right.
You'd have to stay inside for 3 months.
This was also when all the channels could be on one little turn dial.
Right.
It doesn't exist anymore either.
Can I tell you, that's probably why there are kids that are heavy these days, because their parents aren't asking them to do everything for them, including change the channel.
The reason for obesity is that.
I'm not kidding. I must have had to get up 100 times.
I know.
And I'm like, why me? There are 3 kids in this family. Well, you're the youngest.
Right.
All right.
You're really good at it.
What channel? And then my brother would just be a jerk and as soon as put channel 7 on. Oh, I thought I meant channel 2.
Right.
Could you get the UHF going and do 32? I'm sorry, I meant 9.
But that dial was always cracked. It was broken for some reason.
That's why you had the pliers
right next to
the TV.
That's true.
God, that was living, Bill.
That's when things were good.
That's right.
All right, we will take a quick break, and then we'll do some news. And then you know who's coming on?
Yes.
The Peanut. Charles Tillman will be by for Ask the Peanut. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Found a peanut just now. Cracked it open.
You want to get punched by him, don't you?
I think this is a terrible choice of music.
You chose it.
It doesn't mean I don't think it's a terrible choice of music.
Charles Peanut Tillman on the line with us. You got to punch this Bill Lefkid.
Don't do it, Charles. Violence never solved anything.
No, it didn't. How you guys doing?
We're great.
We're doing great. Hey, Charles, there was something that just came out on theundefeated.com. Retired NFL player Charles Tillman feels people need to start loving each other. Amen to that.
Yep.
Yeah, I just think there's, you know, with all the violence that has troubled this world the last couple of weeks, I felt like there was no humanity left. And, man, if we just loved one another, respected one another, I think we'd be in a better place right now. And I think more and more public figures are starting to speak their minds. I saw Michael Jordan, he came out with a quote or I should say a statement today talking about gun violence. And it's good, you know, people who have a voice are starting to state their opinion and they're starting to become more vocal and get more involved, and that's what we need.
And this there's a story that was brought up in this article about you in the sixth grade. You wanted to share that with us?
Sixth grade?
Yeah.
In
California, you were hanging outside a porch and...
Oh, the profiling one. Yeah. So when I was in sixth grade, I lived in Fort Ord, California, as a military base. And me and my five other fellow African-American friends, we were at this house outside. It was a duplex, and we were outside on our friend's half. And this white kid came out, and he was kind of rude, told us to shut up, stop making all this noise, nobody making noise. And I yelled, shut up, back. And he runs in the house. Apparently, he called the cops. 10 minutes later, cops come out, you know, two squad cars and like a wagon, or it might have been three cars. And then it's like, let me see your hands, get your hands up. And my brother and I and our three other friends were sitting on our hand, or we're on our knees with our hands above our heads for like 30 minutes just sitting there trying to figure out what the hell just happened. You know, they never asked us, you know, our version of the story. It was just, you know, we were five hoodlums, you know, making trouble. And the cops actually ended up lying. I was like, well, could y'all call my mom and just like have my mom come get me, because we didn't do anything wrong. And yeah, we'll call your mom, we'll call your mom. And you know, 20 minutes later, no parents. So they finally release us, and then, you know, I went home, and my mom's like, yeah, well, we told our mom what happened, and she's like, yeah, the cops never called me. And then that was probably the first time I was just like, dang, they just picked on us because we were black. She was like, yeah, you know. And then my mom kind of had that conversation with me. And
tell us the advice that your mom gave you at that point.
The one thing she told me, she was like, you're not going to win in that moment. Just comply, do what they say, but make sure you get a badge number and you figure out what car they were driving, or a car ID or something like that. You know, car 101, car 15.
Car 54.
And old car 54, great show.
It was.
Yeah, that was pretty much the advice that she gave me. And you know, so far it's worked out. Being a black man, even when I was in the league, I still got stopped. I remember after my rookie year, I got stopped. I was in Buffalo Grove, and I came from a Target, paid for all my stuff, had a conversation with my cashier. Walked out, got in the car, and then about a mile later, up the street, the cops pulled me over aggressively. Driver, get out of the car now. Show me your hands. I'm like, what the hell just happened? And, you know, it was like, yeah, someone said you stole this. I was like, no, here's my receipt right here. I said, oh, sorry. Now, I don't blame the cops because they just were responding. They're just reacting. I blame the dumb security guard who thought I stole it. You know, it just... Was it because I was black? Hey, man, I don't know. But there have been a few instances that me, myself, I've gotten stopped, approached a certain kind of way because I am an African-American male. Is it right? No.
But how do you respond in a respectful manner and answer their questions but get their badge number if something goes funky, correct?
Yeah. So in the incident with Target, I took all my stuff back to Target. I was like, you know what, man, screw y'all. Give me my money back.
Yeah.
You know, y'all think I stole this, and I had a conversation with your cashier. You know, if you accuse somebody, you damn sure better be right. Mm. You about to try to take my civil liberty from me. You about to take my freedom away and get me locked up. So you can't make a mistake in an instance like that. You can't.
So from Chicago Bear to Ambassador of Love, Charles yes. Peanut Tillman.
Yes.
Got to. How you guys doing today? Y'all got me fired up right now.
Don't get fired Sorry. Up. We're proud of you because we know what a great football career you had. And honestly, Charles, our hope was that you'd play a few more years in the NFL. It didn't work out that way. But the way it all came together with you signing a contract with the Bears to retire as a Bear, just a masterful, masterful plan.
Yeah, I knew I was going to sign the contract, but I didn't really want to do the press conference.
No?
I didn't. My wife made me do the press conference. I chose not to do it, but she told me I had to do it, so I went on and did it.
Why didn't you want to?
So, I really just wanted to go up there in like a cutoff T-shirt and some shorts and my flip-flops, sign my contract, say what's up to people, you know, the people that I know in the building, and just come back home.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to be about me.
But when you're a fan favorite, you were such a fan favorite for so long, and we hated to see you go the first time, it was kind of a nice circle ender for you to retire as a Bear, and we all just wanted you to know how much we all appreciated you and loved you.
And you know what? The support. I feel so insignificant at times, and I like that, though. I really like that. But I mean, I couldn't tell you. And if you guys are listening, Charles Tillman fans, I apologize in advance. And I'll keep apologizing because I'm trying to get through all of the tweets and Facebook and Instagram. Like, I'm trying to respond to all y'all, but there's been thousands and thousands of just congratulations and thank you. And so I'm still trying to get all that.
Sure.
It actually shocked me because when I released the video, AA, my wife and I, and another friend, we released it on, I forget what day, I think a Monday. Yeah, we released it on a Monday about a week ago, and we sat back and watched how that thing just took off.
And this is the peanut punch.
The video, the peanut punch.
Yeah, right. We put it up on our Facebook page. My favorite part is the White Castle part. I love that.
Very funny.
Yeah. And I was scared to hit, so we finished everything, and all I had to do was hit one button to post it, and I waited like a good 30 seconds before. It was like I had my hand on the trigger to blow up something. I was like, don't. He was like, you going to do it? I was like, yeah, I'm just a little. Once I hit it, it's final, so I can't. I'm going to hit a post, and it just, from there, within like 30 seconds, that thing just took off. And
yeah.
I actually was the number 3 person on Twitter. I was trending on Twitter.
Wow.
I was kind of cool.
How about that?
How does that surprise you? Come on.
Yeah, I was number 3 in the world.
Not bad, Charles. That's wonderful. Charles,
No.
All right, we have a question. Last time we had Jan, we did a segment with you called Ask Peanut, where people could call or text anything they wanted to know, and you would answer it. You did fantastic. You did some questions about recipes. You did some questions about relationships. You were great at it. Can we ask you if you would reprise that? Will you do that again with us today?
Definitely.
Excellent. Excellent.
All right, well, we'll take a quick break, and we will come back. And anything at all that you'd like to ask Charles Peanut,
we're already getting texts. People already want to ask Charles questions.
And anything, not real serious stuff, but, you know, who knows? He fielded that last time, too.
Yep.
So 312-981-7200, ask the Peanut,
yes.
Ask Peanut.
Either one. Call us or text us, and we'll get to that next. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder, along with Charles Tillman on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder, along with Charles Peanut Tillman, the once and always Bear. He just retired the other day as a member of the Chicago Bears. We're sorry to see him go, but glad if he is going. He's going out in our colors. We are doing a segment with him that we've done in the past called Ask the Peanut, where Charles will answer whatever question you have about anything you want. We've got a bunch of calls and texts.
All right. Charles, this is John. John, ask the Peanut.
Well, I work for the Chicago White Sox, and I just wonder what his opinion is of the incident with
Chris Sales Friday night, cutting up all the jerseys. I realize he's frustrated with his salary, but it seemed awfully childish.
Charles, have you ever cut up somebody's jock strap in the locker room?
Probably was a joke. I put Icy Hot in it one time.
Oh, you did? Wow.
It was a joke. It was, and it worked out fairly well. He never figured out what happened. So remind me what Chris did.
Chris was in the clubhouse and decided to, he didn't want to wear the throwback jerseys and cut his jersey up with some scissors and a couple of other jerseys and now has a 5-game suspension.
Okay. And all because he didn't want to wear the jersey, right?
That seems to be the bulk of it, yes.
Although there's been some problems in the past. John, would you like to build on that a little? All right, John,
no,
we'll take
we don't
his.
Have John?
No, but he's mad at management, so he.
Right. So here's what I would say. You have to take that up with management, okay?
You put your
big boy pants on, and you got to go talk to your GM or your head coach, or I guess in baseball they call it a skipper, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of find it disrespectful for you to cut up the jersey, because what about the people who. How can I word this? I think it was disrespectful because it shows that there was a lack of disrespect about for the people who played the game before you.
Sure.
You know, the people who wore that throwback jersey. Bottom line, at the end of the day, it's a business. You got to be a professional. You know, if something doesn't go your way, you can't, you know, cry off and whine and scream and cut up a jersey. You got to put your big boy pants on if you're playing in the big boy league and go talk to management. Hey, here's what I got a problem with. I don't like these jerseys. I'm superstitious. My arm doesn't feel right in this jersey. I don't like my salary. You got to get your agent involved. But you have to do that and keep that internal. You can't make that public knowledge now. It's just the media, and you just draw more attention, negative attention, to your team.
You're a wise sage.
You are
a
wise sage. It's true.
815.
In sports, man, you don't want to be that guy.
Right.
We're like, oh, he's that guy. And I don't know Chris, but I'm pretty sure he's a good dude. And we all have, trust me, we all have limits. I even have a limit.
Yeah.
I know you two have a limit. But you just, when you're in the public eye like that, you have to, you know, just maybe take a second, give a little woo-saw, take a deep breath. All right, you know what? In hindsight, yeah, I probably shouldn't have ripped up those jerseys. I probably should have just went to the GM and said, this, and that.
Right, right.
You live and you learn.
Solid answer.
All right, Greg wants to talk to you. Greg, Charles Peanut Tillman.
Peanut, I have a question for you. You're a young guy and you're retired. What are you going to do with the rest of your life? What's going to keep you busy from now on?
Well, right now, great question. I took a job with Fox Sports. So I'm a West Coaster now. I'll be in L.A., getting my tan on, and because I need a tan. I'm light skinned now, so I need to go look dark.
I can tell.
I'll be in LA doing a show with a few of my co-hosts, or a few of my colleagues, I should say, Carissa Thompson, Dave Weinstadt, and Colin Coward. So that's what I'm doing right now. But great question.
Good luck to you.
Job.
Greg, thanks for the call. That's exciting news, Charles. I didn't know that. So will that start when the football season starts in September?
Yes, it will. It'll start. I'll do my. I'm a black anchorman, is what I tell everybody. I'm a black Ron Burgundy. I'm working on my mustache game.
Well, I was going to ask if Wanstead's mustache has filled in a little bit.
Yeah. But mine is dark, though. I have a thick, I got that Magnum PI joint.
Charles, here's a question by way of text.
That's my man.
That's your role model. 708 wants to know this. What is Charles's favorite breakfast cereal, and what is his second favorite breakfast cereal?
Favorite breakfast cereal. Frosted Flakes.
Frosted Flakes.
Honey Bunches of Oats.
Yeah, and Honey Bunches of Oats.
Honey Bunches of Oats.
Interesting.
I like that.
Honey Bunches of Oats.
They
used to make a cereal called Nut and Honey, but they got rid of it.
I remember Nut and Honey.
Someone wants to know if, did anyone ever refer to Charles as Chucky? And if so, how did that work out for them?
Hmm.
My dad called me Chuck, and Coach Landry, my high school football coach, called me Chuck. Them the only two people that called me Chuck. Never got a Chucky.
Charles, how about this one? This is from 773. My wife and I are having our second child in August. We can't decide on a name. What do you think we should name our daughter?
So here's what I say to that. You and your wife should have the baby, and then pick your best name and have your wife pick the best name. And then for a day or a couple of hours, the first 12 hours, call her by that one name.
Like a test drive.
That the dad chooses. Yeah, call her by the name that the dad chooses.
Yeah.
See if it feels right. If it doesn't, okay, have the wife call her by her name, you know, and just do that and see which one fits. Only reason I say that, that's exactly what I did with my youngest daughter, Tessa. I was going to name her Tessa or Olivia.
Uh-huh.
And for about half a day, when she was born, birth certificate and all that, when she first came out, it was just baby Tillman. So I was like, hey, Olivia, hey, Livy. Came up with all these nicknames. And, you know, the next day or 12 hours later, hey, Tessa. Hey, T. Hey, Tess. Tessa. You know.
And it made sense. Although I like the name Baby Tillman. I think that's a great name, Baby Tillman.
If I have another child, that's what I'm naming it. Yes. And finally, how'd you get the nickname Peanut? That's from 219.
My Aunt Renee gave me the nickname Peanut. I was a little baby when I came out of the womb, and just my Aunt Renee saw me and said, man, you look like a little peanut. Ooh, I like the sound of that. You look like a little peanut. Call him little peanut. Hey, peanut. I've been a peanut for 35 years.
Wow.
And now a retired peanut.
A retired peanut.
Now I'm a retired peanut. Now I'm just nut.
Hey, listen, anytime you want to talk to us, these listeners just love talking to you and they want to ask the peanut. So anytime you have time, we're here for you. Come by and visit us again. Congratulations on a job well done.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Take care, Charles. Enjoy the summer. And like Wendy said, the door's always open. Come on in.
Yes. Thank you. You have a good one.
You too.
Love
Charles Tillman, he's the peanut.
Looks like a little peanut.
He looks like a peanut. How about that?
You look like a hazelnut.
I do look like a hazelnut.
Mr. B.
That's my new nickname. Stick around. We'll find out what Roe and Anna have next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.